This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Good day, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to another episode of For Your Consideration. And today we're going to do things a little bit differently. The last few episodes, we've been looking at different eras and the wrestlers that highlight those eras. But today, we're going to talk about the women of wrestling. And we're going to look at the different women who made an impact in the WWF, WWE, probably over the last 20 years. And, you know, kind of how the role of women's wrestling in the company has changed. And since we're doing this for the greatest women, the greatest wrestler in the WWF ever project, I wanted to make sure I got a couple of people who actually have, I want to say, expertise in women's wrestling. I know you've heard on the very first episode of this series, Glenn Butler from the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular. And you can read his Wednesday walk around the web over at Place to Be Nation. And we have a new friend on our little podcast series, and that's Stacey O'Loughlin from Australia. And Stacey is a avid women's wrestling fan, and she's going to make the case for several of these women being on the list. And I'm looking forward to talking to her. So I'm happy both of you are with me today, and let's just jump right in. And the first woman we're going to talk about is Sable. And Sable's interesting because she's probably the one woman on the list who has no shot at making a list if you're looking at her in-ring exploits. Like zero consideration for being in-ring. But she was such a huge star during the Attitude Era, which was a huge era that we talked about on our last episode, for those of y'all that want to check that out. And I'm really interested in what you guys think, because Glenn, you watched the Attitude Era, right? Were you around during the Attitude Era?
I was not a fan during the Attitude Era. I came around a little later. And actually, the Attitude Era is not something that I've generally warmed to.
Good, because I feel the same way, as people who listened to the last show know. And my friend Stacey from Australia, she also was not around from the Attitude Era. So I'm glad y'all get to look at this objectively and not with warm fuzzies of nostalgia when we talk about Sable. But from the footage you've seen, Stacey, I'm really interested in getting your take on how she was portrayed, how popular she was, and what you thought of her as a character and whatnot. So I'm gonna let you talk about Sable briefly.
Yeah, well, like you said, I wasn't around for this period, so all I know is what I've sort of gone back and seen of her. And really, she's just, I almost don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, I get it in the sense that, like, she was a hot blonde sheila with big tits, and so, you know, she was really over it. But, like, there's nothing about her, like, in a performance sense, that really, like, appeals to me in any way. Like, she wasn't a particularly good promo from what I've seen. She, you know, she didn't really do anything much very interesting except just be a hot chick. You know what I mean? So I'm not really a big fan of her from anything that I've seen. And like you said, the few times that she actually worked matches, she was just no good at all. I just watched a 6-minute Sable pay-per-view match yesterday, and it really just ruined my whole day. It was terrible. I understand, like, the appeal that she had, especially during the Attitude Era, when, you know, that was all she really needed to be as over as she was, you know. But from everything apart from that, like, apart from the simple fact that she was a big star, which she was, and, like, it's amazing to see just how over she is during those years, because she was, you know. And apparently, I read somewhere that her Playboy issue was, like, one of, like, the biggest selling Playboys ever.
Huge.
She was Yeah, because she was so popular during that time, and wrestling was so popular as well, you know. So, like, I get it for the star power, but for anything else, I don't see any kind of, you know, case whatsoever. She didn't, right. She doesn't do anything for me.
No, that's a fair point. Glenn, are you in agreement with Stacey here, or do you have any fondness for Sable whatsoever?
I'm totally in agreement. Sable, I think, is one of the people who typifies the bad old days for women's wrestling in the WWF / E, whatever, in that she had her powerbomb, and that was good, but otherwise, like, her actual working, it almost feels wrong to even criticize, because that's so beside the point. For a lot of the Attitude Era, and especially women's roles in the Attitude Era, but so much of it is kicking and slapping and hair-pulling, evening gown matches and bikini matches and mud wrestling and all of the things that you associate with women's wrestling in an era when women's wrestling was not taken seriously at all.
Oh, it absolutely wasn't taken seriously. It was absolutely a novelty at the time. To me, it's like Vince Russo's wet dream, right? To have some hot blonde parading around you know, being violent.
yeah, getting into cat fights with other women. And
yeah, I mean, because there was absolutely no reason she should have ever been put in a match. I mean, just
no,
unqualified.
No,
and we're all in agreement there. So none of us are going to have Sable on our list, right? Even though she was hugely popular and a big Playboy star.
No, definitely not.
Correct.
Okay, good. Well, let's go to a more interesting woman from the Attitude Era who also had a huge selling Playboy issue. But not only was she a women's wrestler who wrestled against the women from the era and hated them, squashed them, really, but wrestled the men. And that's kind of where her case hinges, is because she was in a huge faction, DX. She had decent matches or you know, mat matches that are looked fondly back by people who watched the Attitude Era, like the Jeff Jarrett farewell match or the Chris Jericho series. And we're, of course, talking about Chyna. You know, she starts off as Triple H's bodyguard, and then she starts getting into matches, and then her big move was the low blow, you know, like, how dare she, you know, crotch some guy. And then, of course, you know, then that had a phone call, and I'm going to have to mute that. Did that come across?
Yeah,
you went mute.
Yeah, you went silent for a few seconds.
Oh, okay. Okay. Can you edit this out, Glenn?
Yeah, let me note down that we're edit at 7 minutes. Okay. You were in the middle of describing Chyna's like progression.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just gonna start off where she was a bodyguard in DX then, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She was a bodyguard in DX. And then from there, as she started wrestling men, people were shocked that, you know, she was actually performing wrestling moves. You know, she had the big low blow. And then even won the women's title later on, having matches with Lita and those women. But the bread and butter is going to be the matches with the men, the Jarrett feud, the Jericho feud. And it really looked at the time, and this is somebody who lived through the Attitude Era, that these guys were carrying Chyna through the matches. And you couldn't really say that she was a great promo, because part of her gimmick, like other silent bodyguards, like Bob Orton Jr. or anyone else like that, was to be the silent bodyguard. Because when she talked, she didn't really have like a natural like wrestling promo voice. I mean, she sounded like she couldn't carry a promo ever. And, you know, that's somebody who lived through Chyna during that era. And so I'm going to give my take on those matches that I mentioned, the Jericho and Jarrett feuds. But from what you guys have seen of Chyna, I'm really curious on what you think of her. And we'll start with you, with Chyna Glynn.
Well, to judge some of her matches, I voluntarily watched a Jeff Jarrett match for this podcast, and I resent you for making me do it.
Me too.
Because even aside from the Attitude Era, I am not a Jeff Jarrett fan. That match I don't think held up at all. The Jericho matches I thought were okay. I understand your point about feeling like they were walking Chyna through it, because during all of those matches, I thought that Chyna should really be taking more of the match. That part of what they were selling was the size mismatch. You know, she was bigger than Jeff Jarrett. She was much bigger than Jericho. And so I felt like with that size mismatch, she should really have been on offense more, and she should not have had to sell quite as much as she did, especially in one of the Jericho matches. I think of the Chyna matches I've seen, my favorite one is actually her last match in the company with Lita for the women's title, because they really did sell that Lita was the first person in the women's division, at least, to really take the fight to her and kind of make her work for the win. And that, I thought, was a really effective story that they were able to lace through that match, as opposed to the matches with Jared and Jericho, where her wins almost seemed fluky, especially the Jarrett one. That was super cheap. So some of the matches didn't really come up to par. Chyna, I think, is an interesting person to consider with the qualifications that we have for this project, because you have, you know, jump up moments and all that stuff, and historical importance. And one of the questions I think with her is, how do you weigh historical importance when the history she made wasn't made very well? You know, she was the first woman in the Royal Rumble, but it was one of the worst Rumbles in history. She was the first woman to win the Intercontinental title, but she won it in a good housekeeping garbage weapon match with a cheap restart after a false finish. You know, she was hyped up a lot for her Playboy appearance, which in retrospect is always going to feel patronizing, I think. She did have crossover appeal. She was very well known, but I'm not sure that, like, the way that happened really kind of pumps her up in terms of qualifications for these lists.
Okay, well, Stacey, what about you?
Well, I pretty much have to echo basically all of what Glenn said. Like, her matches with the men, I find just constantly disappointing. Like, if you're going in expecting anything from Chyna, then you'll be disappointed. I know better now. But, like, yeah, it's just, they're not good, you know? And I didn't think of it before, but I see Glenn's point now that she actually, like, sort of sold too much during those matches, because she really was muscly and big enough to, like, sort of compete evenly, but they sort of treated her like a novelty and she would only win with a low blow or, you know, in cheap, very cheap ways. Yeah, but the matches aren't good. Like, the Jericho matches, like, are good because Jericho went above and beyond trying to carry her through them, you know what I mean, and make them good and stuff, but there's nothing else that stands out from her whole run as a wrestler. Like, I think she's really good as the bodyguard, like, in the beginning, as Hunter's bodyguard, because, like, it's a very interesting role for a guy to have a woman as his bodyguard, you know what I mean? To get him out of trouble. It's an interesting dynamic, and I think it worked really, really well in those years. But as a singles wrestler herself, I think she falls down because she's just really just not that good in the ring to back it up. And I agree with you as well that the Lita match actually is kind of good. Like, it's probably Chyna's, it may be Chyna's best match, really, unless you want to sort of count a Jericho match or the Jarrett match. But apart from that, like, and yeah, and it was really good seeing a woman getting offense on her, particularly because in the beginning when Chyna was feuding with Ivory, she, you know, gave her nothing. and didn't sell for. But she shouldn't have sold right. anything for Ivory anyway, because she's so much bigger than her and so much bigger than all the girls. So it was really hard. When I watched China's run in the women's division, and it was really hard for them to try and make it, like, competitive, you know what I mean? To make it believable that any of these girls would get offense on her after she'd spent so many years competing with men. You know, so it was hard. But the leader match is actually pretty okay. But, yeah, apart from that, like, I just... You know, like I said, she works as a bodyguard, but I don't think she worked very well as a wrestler.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what kind of made the bodyguard work, and I'm going to say this, is she wasn't attractive. You know, like, when she first came, she was not an attractive woman. Like I said, she had facial reconstructive surgery or something. Like, she had her jaw fixed, and then she had the boob job and everything. That kind of, like... you know, made her like that future sex symbol or whatever. But at first it was kind of like this big burly woman, you know, coming out that kind of made that work. And after hearing her speak for the first time, you're like, oh, that's why she doesn't speak, because she's a horrible promo.
Yeah. So, she's a terrible promo.
Actually, the best thing about that entire Jericho feud was when Jericho was torturing her in, like, a closet or in the back and broke her thumb. Did y'all ever see that?
Yeah, I saw that a while ago.
Crying. I mean, it was a little uncomfortable, but in terms of acting, it was pretty great acting. You know, it was just Jericho losing his shit and China being tortured. But to me, the more insulting thing was that Jeff Jarrett match, the Jeff Jarrett feud. I hate Jeff Jarrett. I hate his guitar. I mean, he's been doing this stupid gimmick for 20 plus years. It's never gotten over. He's never, like, improved a promotion because of his presence. He's always brought it down. He's a big proponent of Vince Russo, so I'll always hate him for that. And so I have nothing positive. No, China has no shot on my list at all. I don't care what kind of historical significance she's had, and I've never seen her Playboy pictures either, just for the record. So let's move on to another wrestler, and this next wrestler I'm interested in, because she's always been praised as a good wrestler, but when I watched her wrestle, and this was live when it happened, when I watched her wrestle, I kept waiting to see the good matches, and they kind of never materialized for me. And so I'm going to let you start off with this one, Stacey, and we're going to talk about Molly Holly. And the reason, you know, because when we were making this list, like, it never even occurred to me that Molly Holly should be one of the women we should talk about today. But you said, no, we need to talk about Molly. I said, okay, Stacey wants to talk about Molly. I want to make sure that we get Molly in. So I'm going to kind of let you make an argument for Stacey and then get Glenn's opinion. So, Stacey, why Molly Holly?
Yes, Molly Holly, I definitely want to talk about. I love her. As I just told you, Will, before, I've been going back and watching all the Divas matches in WWE since about the year 2000, so everything from the 21st century on, I guess. So I've been watching basically most of Molly Holly's run now, and honest to God, before this, I liked Molly, but I wasn't, like, a huge fan of Molly. But now I am a huge fan of Molly. She's so great. She's so consistent and just so good. And she can take any of the girls, whether it's like Trish, who hasn't been really trained up yet, or whether it's like some scrub like Tori or Stacy or fucking Ivory, who's terrible, and just picks them up and just drags them to these, like, incredibly watchable matches. Like, and the thing about dragging them up to these matches is that it's still a 2-minute match, so it still is always going to have a ceiling. You know, it's still a 2-minute match with Tori Wilson, but it's like the best 2-minute match with Tori Wilson you can possibly imagine. That's like, and that's really the beauty of Molly, and that's her main sort of accomplishment in that sense, that she's just like just such a great worker and so great at working with the girls, no matter who they are or how good they are. Like, she's just so solid in the ring. You know, mechanically she can do all these things. She can work a limb, she can get nasty and vicious and, like, beat people up. Or even in her earlier year when she was a babyface, like, for the first year or so, she was a really good babyface, and she was busting out all these, like, you know, arm drags and babyface spots and, like, dives and shit. So, you know, she could do it all in the ring and really would do whatever was required of her. And just, and like I said, she just made any match she was in, she made it better. And, you know, so like it, and again, like the great matches aren't there as much as they are with certain other girls, but that's more about opportunity than anything else, because she didn't really get the push that other girls around that time got, like Trish did or Lita did, or even like Victoria or Jazz or other girls who got, you know, sort of runs with the title. Even when Molly had the title, she was often in the background compared to Trish or whatever else that was going on. So she didn't often get a lot of long matches. And when I say long, I mean, you know, maybe 4 or 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Yeah. 5 minutes.
Yeah. She didn't get many 5-minute opportunities.
She didn't get many long 5-minute pay-per-view matches like the other girls did. But this is what I'm saying.
This breaks. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying. Like, you know, and but whenever she did, she would do good stuff. Like her, like, pay-per-view matches with Trish are all really, really good. The one at Unforgiven 2002. Just
for reference, and there are smarter nerds out there than me. What specific pay-per-view should I keep an eye out for? Because now you have me intrigued. Like, if I have to.
I think her best pay-per-view match is probably Unforgiven 2002 versus Trish. She had another one versus Trish at King of the Ring 2002.
Okay.
Apart from that, it's hard because, like I said, that's pretty much like the end of it. You know what I mean? Like her matches with Victoria, like when they had the hair match at WrestleMania 20, it's fine, but it's not that good. And her matches with Victoria at that time aren't that good. That's the sort of one disappointing thing that I think that she was doing. But like apart from that, like, and again, it's just about opportunity, because I can't really think of many other pay-per-view matches that she had offhand ones with Trish.
Now is she going to make your list?
She's definitely going to make my list.
Bottom half?
Yeah, somewhere in the bottom half. Like it's again, like it's mainly because she's sort of like a, you know, in quotes, work rate candidate. You know what I mean? And it sort of manifests itself in a different way, because she's not having like a bunch of 4-star matches or a bunch of,
right,
you know, all these sort of things. But what she's doing in the circumstances in which she's doing it is just so good. And like I said, she makes every match better. She like does so much with so little. And it's like every week, because like I'm watching all of these matches, and every time I see a Molly match, it's her doing the work, and I'm just like, oh, thank God Molly is here having this match, you know.
Okay.
Like
she dragged Ivory
to this like insanely good, decent match in 2003 that just blew my mind, because Ivory is so terrible, and it was like the only, you know, good singles match Ivory like basically ever had, and it's just things like that, like a kind of accomplishment like that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting you said that. And by the way, whenever an Australian says "and shit" at the end of a sentence, I crack up, because when I talk to my buddies, that's how we talk. Hey man, you know, what are you doing and shit? And you know, for you to say that, I marked out anyway. But
Yoga Day as well. So.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, yeah, so Molly. I'm glad you made that argument. You know, I don't know if it's going to win me over enough. It won me over enough to watch the matches. I don't know if it'll win me over enough to actually put her on my list. But I'm kind of interested in Glenn's take. Molly Holly, like, is this somebody you were even considering, Glenn?
She's not someone that I was considering before I just heard Stacey's take, but I'm a little more intrigued now. To prepare for this show, what I watched was the WrestleMania match with Victoria, which you're right, was not good. It was short and abrupt. But the Vengeance match between them, I can actually vouch for a little bit. I thought that was above average.
Shit, yeah? Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm almost there. I'm like 2 weeks away from getting to that match in like chronologically. So now I'm looking forward to that. That's good.
yeah, there was a little more limb work. I didn't look at the time for the match, but it felt like they got a little more time. It felt a little more meaty. It still wasn't, I mean, don't get your hopes up for like 10, 15 minutes or anything, but
I never do.
No, I'm sure after watching this much. But it definitely felt above average for what I was expecting. So I'm a little more intrigued now. She's right off the list from what I was thinking earlier. But I'm going to go back to that Unforgiven match and the King of the Ring match now that you've mentioned them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're probably her best work because, like I said, it's just that's the one time that she got like a 5-minute pay-per-view match with Trish to actually like do some work. You know what I mean? So.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm kind of interested. You didn't bring up like some of the out of ring stuff, like her love affair with Spike Dudley, you know, or
Yeah, I didn't even think of that, but I think she's good in that stuff too. You know what I mean? Like that was a good like little love story angle, and like yeah. And then all her different partnerships with guys, like her superhero thing with the Hurricane. Yeah. You know, things like that. They're all cool. She was with Crash as well for a minute as well.
Well, the thing with Crash, and we talked about this on the Attitude Show last week. The Crash Holly interaction was all Crash. Like Crash was like the greatest resentful cousin ever. Like he, you know, yeah. It's like you're a girl. What are you doing here? You know. So I'm giving Crash props for that. But I did want to mention that for people who because I guarantee you there are people out there who, before you made your case, gave Molly Holly no shot, you know, and then the first thing that would pop up would be like the Spike Dudley love story or whatever. So I want to make sure that we mentioned that. But
yeah, good. And there's also the horrible angle they did where they turned her into the virgin and called her fat and that she had a fat ass and everything and granny panties.
Mickey James existed.
Yeah, okay. And I just sat through it and it's just horrid to listen to.
Can't help themselves, can they?
This company's history. Yeah. That's almost every woman that they've had up until recently. You know, where they have to demean them in some manner.
Yeah. But to her credit, she dealt with it well. Like she leaned into it and like played the character kind of like well, even though, you know, you're sitting through it and it's rubbish. But like she actually played that character well as a heel as well. I just thought as well.
No, I'm with you on that. And you know, before in the Attitude Era, you know, when Russo was around, you know, when they're objectifying women, you could always say, it's Vince Russo. But then when they continued to do it afterwards, you know, hot lesbian action and then like the body shaming and everything else, you're like, nah, this is Vince and Kevin Dunn and those guys.
It's everyone. Yeah. It's Vince. It's Kevin Dunn. It's Jerry everyone. Lawler on commentary.
Jerry Lawler's just getting paid to do what he says. He has a earpiece in his ear. That's all.
Yeah, they're all like even JR.
I'm joking, man.
JR says horrible things at this period. Like you're right. It's everyone. Yeah, the whole company.
Let's be fair, right? They're playing up to their fan base, you know, male testosterone driven men.
It's terrible.
I guarantee you, there are going to be people listening to this podcast who have absolutely no problem with them doing this. So, I mean, you know, it's just when you're a wrestling fan, you either accept that that's part of the business or you don't, you know, and that's truth about that.
I'm sure there are people listening who have no problem with Jerry Lawler saying during like pretty much every women's match, you know, I think deep down all women hate each other.
Yeah, sure.
which watching matches to prepare for this show, I heard him saying in the late 90s and I heard him saying in the 2000s, and he was saying it on one of the pay-per-view post shows like 3 months ago, you know.
Yeah.
This is just terrible.
Wow, I had no idea he said that so much, man. Shit, I might move him up five spots on my list now. I'm joking. Anyway, let's move on to a woman that we've actually touched upon a bit already, and that is Lita. And Lita, she just went into the Hall of Fame this year, and she's an interesting case because Lita, I think, is someone who kind of got that rep as like the first good women's wrestler, because when Trish Stratus first started wrestling, she was not known as a good wrestler. She kind of evolved into that. You know, she was woefully green and really looked inexperienced in her first start as a wrestler. Whereas Lita came in, you know, had already been in ECW, been in Mexico. Not saying that she did any great work there, just saying that she had at least been around the business for a while. And, you know, she came in and that she was, you know, she was doing moonsaults and hanging out with the Hardy Boys. And so, you know, she was actually involved in the matches, like, you know, did the run in at WrestleMania 17. And so she kind of has that reputation as being like the first good women's wrestler to kind of take the mantle here of women's champion. But I never thought she was a good wrestler. I always thought she was extremely sloppy, careless even. I mean, careless with her own body even, not just with her opponents. Can't deny she was over. She was exciting. She inspired AJ Lee to become a wrestler, made her cry, you know, all that great stuff. But I never thought of her as a good wrestler. And I kind of liked her as Edge's sidekick during the Rated R Superstar era. But Glenn, Lita's on this list. Would she be on your list when you make your top 100? And what are your thoughts before we give it over to Stacey?
It's possible that she could sneak into the end of my list. I'm not sure if she will. A lot of her matches with Trish are highlights, but even though she came along a little bit before Trish and was better than Trish until Trish kind of improved more and surpassed her. Once Trish did surpass her, Lita was always a step behind. It was like a Savage Hogan deal or a Rock Austin deal where, you know, they were both highly featured in their divisions and they were both very good, but one of them was always pushed more and one of them was always thought of as in a higher position. And so, you know, that set her back a little bit. You're absolutely right that she could be sloppy, and that got her injured a fair number of times. She was very spotty. She had her moonsault and some of her other kind of careless spots that she would toss in all the time.
Like she had that Hurricane Rana head scissor thing.
Yep. And a lot of that I think she picked up in her training in Mexico, picking up a lot of the lucha moves, a lot of the high-flying moves. That was a little particularly innovative for the women's division at the time. And so she really stood out for that, and she got over on the strength of a lot of that stuff. But it was kind of sloppy and spotty. Her promos as well, I think, were a little inconsistent at times. And she's someone who I think might be a little overrated because of the era that she was in. She was, like you said, Will, considered the good women's wrestler, and she was one of the good women's wrestlers at a time when there were not many. If she was in her prime today and would have to hang with all the people who are in the division today, I'm not sure how well she would do. But of course, we're judging the history that happened, right? So it's possible that for the good matches that she did have, she might get onto my list. But, man, a lot of the stuff that sticks in the memory is just how far behind Trish she was. I mean, one of the things that sticks out to me is their respective retirements. Trish got the big, respectful, ceremonial retirement. Lita got humiliated by Crime Time for an angle.
Well, that's because in 2006, that was post-Matt Hardy, and she was a heel and had zero goodwill with the audience at that point. They weren't going to be able to, like, give her a sympathetic, nice exit at that point, I don't think.
True.
So they just went... I'm like, not that I agree with what they did or anything, you know what I mean? It was, like, sort of horrible what they did on the way out, but, like, I don't think that that's necessarily an indication of how big a star she was, because, like, they were just in different circumstances at the time, yeah. I think.
Oh, no, she was definitely over. And she was a star. So, I'm interested, like, because the first thing I opened up with, Stacey's, I didn't think Lita was a good wrestler. And so is Lita someone who's going to make your list? And if she is, I got to hear the argument for this. And if she's not, you know, well, then I agree with you.
She's definitely making my list. No question about that. I'm not sure where. Don't ask me where. I don't know. It's hard to take Lita because she sort of reminds me of Jeff Hardy, but there probably is a better example out there somewhere of someone who really does wrestle like they're completely untrained or like self-trained maybe, because I guess that like the Hardys were self-trained. And has no like sort of like mechanical sort of instincts and no transitions and no sort of traditional wrestling moves and that sort of thing, but can do like a whole bunch of like big like spots, can do dives and flips and, you know, all that sort of thing. So like
you know who that reminds me of? From WCW, Crowbar. You know, that's who it reminds me of. You know,
completely lost on me, but okay.
Oh, you don't know who Crowbar is?
I've never seen him wrestle, so like Lita, like she's sort of like, I take her for what she is, which is, you know, like a spot monkey. You know what I mean? Like a highlight reel person, and in that sense, she was really, really good. Like she was always over, like super over as a babyface, like the whole time, whether she was interfering in the Hardys matches or doing her own stuff, she was always super over as a babyface. Even like when her and Trish were like standing next to each other as babyfaces at a certain point, she was always more over than Trish, even when they were pushing Trish more, you know. So like she was always over, and then she had that good heel run in the end where she like flipped around, obviously because of real life, and then became this big hated heel. And I think she was a good heel in the end with Edge. Like, I agree with you, Will. I think what she did worked a lot because people just responded to it. She just had that charisma and that connection with the crowd. The crowd loved her. You know, she had the great character as, like, the sort of, you know, every girl or every woman, you know, however you want to say it. Like, and she did, like, the funny thing about the Attitude Era and those era of women's matches is that even though they had all like the bra and panties matches and the stripping and rolling around spanking and like, you know, getting naked, all that sort of stuff, no matter what happened in the match, all of that sort of sexy stuff that's supposed to pop the crowd, the biggest pop in the match was always when Lita would slam them and then point at the top rope because she was going up to do the moonsault. Just that, like, motion of pointing, like, I'm going up the top, that was always, boom, the biggest pop of the match, even more than all of, like, the titillating stuff that they were doing. So, like, people always responded to what she was doing, and, like, I give her credit for that. I think, like, she wasn't, like I said, she wasn't great in a mechanical sense, but she also, you know, didn't really need to be, because it's not like she's having, like, long 15-minute work rate matches or anything, but it's funny, she has, like, I noticed that she has, like, zero transitions. Like, there are times during matches where, like, she will literally, like, stand in the middle of the ring and not move and just wait for the heel to sort of get up and wander to her so she can do a move. Like, it's so funny. Like, she's zero transitions.
Absolutely.
But it works anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I compare her to someone like Jeff Hardy or someone like Sabu or fucking, I don't know, like, some sort of spot guy who just has such great spots and such a great crowd connection that it works anyway, even if they're sloppy, you know? So
that's okay.
The appeal of her to me. And she, like, her matches with Trish, the one in the Raw main event in 2004, and also Trish's retirement match, those are two of the best women's matches, like, ever in company history. So, like,
really?
She can actually...
Even with all the NXT stuff and the what the women have been doing over the last couple of years.
Even with all the Women's Revolution stuff, they are two fucking great matches. And so I give her credit for that, too. She doesn't have a lot of great matches besides the ones with Trish, so there's that. But she, like I said, what she did worked just so well. Okay. So I give her credit for that.
Okay, and you know, and that's a fair point. Like I said, she has no shot at making my list, because ultimately, if you can't produce in the ring to the level that... you know, the other wrestlers on my list can, then I can't put you on. But having said that, we're going to go to her arch rival, Trish Stratus, now. And Trish is a pretty amazing case, because Trish is somebody who in the beginning absolutely could not work, absolutely could not talk. She was a horrible promo early on. Absolutely dreadful to listen to. But along the way, just being in the company for so long, and you know, developing her craft, she came into her own as a really good promo. Like, she kind of took her stilted way of talking and making it work. And there's one promo she did where she comes out, she's a heel, and Lita's injured, she's on crutches, and the crowd's chanting at her, "Slut, slut, slut." And she says, "Guys, stop calling Lita a slut." Completely turned it on. I mean, it was so great. Like, and it was just something that when I watched, I just remember Lita as like this horrible promo that it really worked. And so I was really impressed with her ability to do that. And the segment is actually pretty good as well. I know Kane was involved in that segment, and we'll just forget that part of it happened, but whatever. let's not dwell on that. But I know a lot of people point to her match with Stephanie McMahon as a highlight, and obviously the Lita stuff. But I'm curious because Trish is like someone I can be objective because she's not making my list, but I can't be objective because like I had a man crush on her, even though I was like married and everything else. Like, ooh, I like her, but never told my ex-wife, but I still had to point that out, but. I don't even like blondes. Anyway, I'm getting off track. But the point being is that she's somebody that I've always had a soft spot in my heart for. But in the ring, I just, a decent, watchable match with Stephanie McMahon, who was not nominated for this project, by the way. Interesting note.
She sucks.
And a questionable, decent feud with Lita in the ring, out of the ring, maybe good stuff. In the ring... I'm going to watch those matches just for you, Stacey. I want to watch the Molly Holly matches and these Lita Trish matches. Might change my mind. I still have 4 spots open on my list, but for me, she's kind of like the first woman's wrestler who was a product of WWE, because Ivory had already been a wrestler for years and years. Jacqueline had already been a wrestler for years and years. Jazz had come from ECW. So Trish was kind of like the first person where the first time I ever saw her was in a WWE ring, who kind of transitioned into a good woman's wrestler within WWE. And so, Glenn, is Trish Stratus making your list?
I think for the combination of her dramatic improvement over the course of her career, the good matches that she had, and the historical importance that she had for really carrying the women's division through the era that she did, I think she pretty much has to get on somewhere.
Okay, so far, just, out of the women we've talked about, we've got Mickie James, because we talked about her on the first show, and Trish are on your list, right, so far?
Yeah.
Okay. Just keeping a head count here. Continue.
I think it's significant that pretty much all of the lowlights for her are early in her career, when she was doing the eye candy stuff for Vince McMahon and all of his condescending directives, the bark like a dog segment and all that. But when she broke out on her own as a wrestler, she really did improve by leaps and bounds for years. And... it really is, like, terrible that she got injured when she did in 2006 and cut off her program with Mickie James, because their WrestleMania match was really good, and their Backlash match was very short and cut off by the injury, but it was, going places. So I really, really wish we would have gotten to see more of that, but what we got was still very good. Even a lot of the promos and character segments leading up to that. She had good character work when she turned heel on Chris Jericho in 2004 and joined with Christian at WrestleMania. So she had the character side of it too, and improved so much in the wrestling side of it that, yeah, I think she definitely has a place.
Okay, that's fair. And Stacey, I'm just going to... throw a wild guess. I'm guessing if Lita's making your list, Trish is definitely making your list, right?
Trish is absolutely making my list. She's the first person on my list.
Okay, cool. Hopefully she's not number one. That just means that you have no objectivity whatsoever. But having said that, I am curious. When you see things like her barking like a dog and doing all that crap that Vince McMahon said, I mean, just as a woman wrestling fan, like, even when I watch it, right, as like this dirty old man, I'm thinking, man, this is garbage. How do you as a, like, seeing the way they would treat women like that? I mean, then you can make her case for your list, but I'm really curious on your opinion as a woman wrestling fan. how you take this stuff in and digest it and you know, continue being a fan. And I'm genuinely curious because I've never had a woman on the air before that's such a hardcore wrestling fan like you are.
Yeah, well, you're right. Like, it's garbage. It's complete garbage. And like you said before, it's one of those things that you just have to sort of close your eyes and accept about wrestling itself. Like, it's along with a lot of things about wrestling that we accept in order to remain fans, I guess. You know, like, but it's one of those things that you just sort of have to understand that this is what WWE is, you know, this is what they do, and you just like, yeah, it's got like, but all the, it's again, like, I've been watching it back, and so especially watching it in 2017 eyes, it's just so disgusting, so much of it. Yeah, the barking like a dog shit is gross, all the, you know, bra and panties and like insisting on stripping everyone down and spanking them shit, it's just nonsense. The commentary is horrid, you know, especially King, but like everyone. You know, it's just, yeah, it's hard to sit through in that sense. Like, that's the hardest thing about watching these matches, is it sitting through all the, you know, the misogyny and all the sexual exploitation. But yeah, it's not nice. It's not good, especially, you know, from my perspective as a woman. Like, I'm just like, please, because I I'm gay, but I still get no like titillation or like gratification out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand, even like on a base sexual level, I don't understand the appeal of that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's not sexy, but even though they're trying to be, you know, like, you know what I mean? I almost don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's, but it's gross, but it's one of those things that you have to, you know, just accept, or else you wouldn't watch, you know.
Well, I think you summed it up in two words perfectly. It's gross. So now let's move on to Trish's in-ring work.
Well, Trish, I don't know if objective is ever the right word, because I'm like completely in love with Trish Stratus. As anyone yeah, exactly. You know, as anyone who's followed me like during the greatest wrestler ever or anything would know, because I put her on my greatest wrestler ever list.
Oh my goodness. Oh okay.
Ahead of like wrestlers that you like,
not ahead of El Dandy, right? El Dandy was higher, right?
No, I didn't even rank El Dandy.
Oh, you're killing me here. Oh my god, you're stabbing me in the heart.
I had Trish ahead of like Fujiwara and William Regal.
What?
Satanico.
Oh god, we got in this podcast right now. God, my ears can't take anymore.
Continue. I know, I'm sorry. But yeah, so like, I am just huge on Trish. I'm probably more huger on Trish than anyone on this earth, even her mother.
Really, ahead of William Regal? Man,
I'll give you some time to digest that. But Trish is just so fucking great. Like, she was like, she came in having been like barely trained, couldn't, you know, really do anything, and like you said, couldn't even like cut a promo, and she just improved immeasurably in such a short amount of time and completely on television. Her first like actual match in a promotion was like, I think, the Fully Loaded pay-per-view, when she was in that six-man against the Hardys and Lita. Like, her first match ever was on pay-per-view, like, apart from her training. You know what I mean? That's insane. And like, she had that before she even like started wrestling house shows. You know what I mean? She had no time to actually like improve until she started on television. So we saw her like improve from the ground up, and she just shot so high. She got She got so good in the ring, you know, and so good as a character worker and as a promo. She was just, by the end, she was such a great promo. Like, those things that she was doing in 2004, like, as a heel, like, just so good. But yeah, she got so great in the ring. She could work in the ring as a heel or as a face. Like, she just had such great matches, like, when she was given the chance to, when she had a long 5-minute match with someone, you know, and she would, like, drag the scrubs to good matches the same way that Molly did. She there are so many matches where, like, regardless of the quality, she was the best part about the match. She was the one holding it together. She was the one making it interesting, making it good. You know, she has all-time great matches in the company. The ones versus Lita that I mentioned, the ones versus Mickie James, especially the WrestleMania 22 match, awesome. great matches with Victoria in like 2003 when they were having street fights and like, you know, weapon shots and everything. Great pay-per-view matches.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. There were some good garbage brawls. You know what I mean? And especially because it's not something that we'd ever seen the women do up to that point, you know, like have actual like real hardcore matches where they'd beat the shit out of each other with weapons and stuff, you know? So she had great pay-per-view matches with Jazz, great pay-per-view matches with Molly, and just, you know, off the top of my head, and just so many good matches on TV, like, along the way, like, dragging, you know, Ivory, dragging Tori, dragging Nydia, dragging Stacy, dragging, God, I can't even, like, remember now, but just so many girls, if she got the chance to do something with them, she would do it, you know. And what I also want to say about Trish, and it's not something that ever gets talked about, I don't think it's something that people even sort of have ever noticed or would even think about, I will say this. Trish Stratus is the most insane, nuttiest bumper in the history of this fucking company.
Wait, time out. Because my man Jerry Lawler falls down bleachers and takes some of the most insane bumps in wrestling history. So if you want to say next to Jerry Lawler, the perverted old man, that's fine.
I will say next to Jerry Lawler in deference to you, sir.
Okay, just had to clarify that. That Jerry Lawler is one of the all-time greatest bumpers of all time ever. Keep going.
I'm fine with that. I agree. But like honestly, like it just and it's like I said, it's not something that anyone would ever sort of credit her for or think about. But like she is a fucking nutty bumper. She's insane. I've been watching these matches every other week. She like takes the most insane, ridiculous bump that like I sit there and I go, holy shit, how is she not dead? Because she will like get like tossed from the top rope straight to the floor, land on her head. She will like hit the barricade like face first and just die. Like just, and so many bumps, like even just taking moves in the ring. If she's taking like someone's power bomb or someone's big move, or whatever, she will fucking eat it. Like it just so many bumps. Like it's ridiculous at this point. I'm sitting here talking to Elliot and Matt D and saying, "Oh my God, check out this bump. Like check out this bump. How is she not dead? She takes the most ridiculous bumps I've ever seen. It's insane."
That's I'm gonna look for that now. I'm gonna hold her to a high standard here. So just you know, because I mean, we're talking
Jerry Lawler
greatest
standard.
Bumpers ever. Jerry Lawler's pretty insane. Some of the Japanese guys are crazy. Some of the 80s guys are some of the best bumpers ever. So I'm going to hold her to that standard, because something that we're going to talk about before the break is what we call the woman's match curve. And I'm going to kind of take you to task for this, only because I want to make sure that we're not grading on a curve when we do this list. But before we get to that, and I'm letting you know in advance, that way while Glenn's talking or, you know, whatever, you can kind of like think of a response while that happens. Glenn will have a chance to do the same because we still have another wrestler. But Glenn, before we move on to the last wrestler before the break, Trish Stratus, making your list.
Probably will, yeah.
Okay, and is there anything that Stacy didn't touch on that you want to add?
Oh, goodness, I think Stacy covered it really well, actually.
Okay, cool. I was being nice and like waiting for Glenn's response. Like, ah, Stacy got it. It's cool. All right, cool. You know, I'm used to doing shows with blowhards like Johnny Sorrow, you know, who love the sound of their own voice, who almost never say, "Oh no, the other person covered it. We're good." You know, like almost never. So I was just waiting, like, "All right, Glenn, what are you going to say?" You know. So I'm not used to somebody who's willing to accept that all grounds are covered. Okay, good enough. Well, let's go to the next wrestler, and that is Beth Phoenix. And Beth is interesting because she's kind of like, I don't want to call her the second coming of China, okay? Because she's not. She was never kind of put in that body. Was she put in a bodyguard role?
Was she not really? No. She was Mickey's bodyguard for like a week in her first week, and then she got injured, and then it died. So no, not really.
Okay, and then she was Santino's love interest. Was that it?
Yes.
Okay.
She was kind of his bodyguard in a way, but just like more for comedy, not really, you know.
And then she threw CM Punk out in that memorable moment during the Rumble, and
her out, I think.
Oh yeah, she threw the Great Khali out.
That's right. Okay.
And then Punk threw her out. Yeah.
And that's when Punk kind of ran roughshod with the Straight Edge Society, right? And
yep.
then
yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was a great moment too.
And then your favorite wrestler ended it.
Who?
Triple H.
Hunter.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
He's gonna the be Hunter
way high on my list. Yeah. He's gonna be way high on my list. Yeah, no. So she has memorable moments, right? The problem for me is that I really wasn't paying attention to her. And this is something I fully admit. I lost so much faith in this company to promote women's wrestlers. And to be fair, I didn't think that they had the personnel to pull it off the way they do today anyway. That almost any time that Kelly Kelly would come out, Beth Phoenix, Mickey Jane, whoever, I was taking a break. I was either getting dinner ready, or if I was at the live shows, it was you know, a run to the restroom, whatever. It just something I wasn't interested in to spend time watching. So I really have a blind spot towards Beth Phoenix's run because I didn't waste my time watching it. But I will say this: I do know that as a kid growing up, her favorite wrestler, Crush. Just so y'all know. Just little random fact that when I was doing a podcast, her ex-boyfriend mentioned that to me on a podcast that will never air because the file got corrupted. But let's not dwell on the past. Having said all that, Glenn, talk about Beth Phoenix and your thoughts.
Beth Phoenix is another one of those people who falls into having been the good women's wrestler during a period of time. In the kind of post-Trish era, where there was Mickie James, there was Beth Phoenix, eventually there was Natalya, and then you had the rest, who had varying levels of talent and varying levels of dedication to kind of improving. And so Beth Phoenix really stood out for her frame, for her kind of projection of strength, that aura that she had. That she portrayed very well, and got a push based on. All of her matches with Mickey James, I think, were at least good, and some of them were very good. There was, earlier today I watched their Lumberjack match from Raw in 2008, and that was really, really fun, just playing off that size differential that Beth Phoenix used in so many of her matches. She got, like, a moment that really sticks with me out of Melina, whom I do not rate as a wrestler, as a character at all, in a, was it an I Quit match or a submission match? I think it was at a One Night Stand.
Hold on. I'm going to be a pig here. I'm going to be a pig here. I absolutely loved Melina doing the splits. It just titillated me. I'm sorry. I liked it. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, so, it was the I Quit match at One Night Stand 2008.
Yes, when she made Melina kick herself, like she bent her leg back so that she made Melina kick herself in the back of the head. It was so, so, so good. Such a good spot, playing off of Phoenix's strength
awesome.
And Melina's flexibility. That perfect combination to have such a memorable spot in a Melina match, which for me is notable. So she had those skills. She had the good matches. She had the good moments in terms of character work. All of her work with Santino I thought was great. I thought their dynamic was really, really good, where she was the bigger and stronger one and she would kind of like take control of their mixed tag matches that they would do. In particular, the one where she won the women's title and he won the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam, and they celebrated with Santino sitting on Beth Phoenix's shoulders, holding the title up. That was just such a good dynamic that they had, and that was, you know, one thing to look forward to their interactions with people week to week on TV. So, ultimately, I think she has enough of a resume to kind of sneak onto the end of my list. I kind of hope she does.
Okay. I've been having this problem lately on the show where I'll have my speaker on mute. And then when it's time for me to talk, I'll talk with the speaker still on mute. So I apologize for that brief moment of silence. Anyway, Stacy, what would you like to add about Beth that Glenn didn't touch on?
Well, I agree with most of what Glenn said, except about dissing the talent levels of other women, but that's for another time. Beth was great. She was very, like, when you think about it, she's very consistently good for, like, basically her whole career. Like, in when she first started working in 2007, I'm not exaggerating when I say that Candice Michelle carried those matches that she had with Beth in 2007 when Beth first won the title. But honest to God. But after that, like, once she hit 2008, it's like some sort of switch flipped, and Beth just got really good very quickly. And she was still, and she was very good the rest of her career. And it's like, that's about like a 5-year run, I think, by the time she left. She was very good for all those years. Like Glenn said, she stood out because of her size, because they hadn't really had someone that big and muscly since China. You know what I mean? Like, Jazz was pretty muscly, but she also wasn't sort of tall. She didn't tower over anyone. Whereas Beth did, and she knew how to use her size. You know, like, as a heel, she would just dominate girls and just toss them around and, like, pick up two girls at once and slam them both at the same time, or, like, the shit she was doing with Melina, where she would bend her in half. Like, that was so good. I agree. And then, as a babyface, because she did, like, have, you know, quite a few years as a babyface as well, she actually sort of knew how to sell just enough, like when she was wrestling girls who were a lot smaller than her, but she would still sell just enough to be vulnerable and to, you know, sort of make that competitiveness out of it. She's got, like, lots of good matches on her resume. Like, the Candice matches are, like, astonishingly good, even though, like I said, Candice was better than her at that point. But, you know, like,
yeah,
really
that's
good matches.
Interesting.
That is, yeah, I'll stand by that. She had good matches with Mickie James, like Glenn mentioned. The I Quit match with Melina is just really fucking good. I love that match. She also had, like, they had a really good match as well at the Rumble, I think, the next year. And that was another good match.
Melina, by the way, another woman, and Candice Michelle did not make the nominations list. So
no. I considered flirting with Melina, but I didn't nominate her.
Yeah. Well, I like Melina. All right, continue. I'm getting off track.
Yeah, I consider Melina, but no, I'm not going to go to bat for her. Beth, she was a good foil for Lay Cool when Lay Cool had their run. Like, she was, like, often, like, the face that was up against them, even though they didn't have, like, a huge specific feud with her. But they had, like, a lot of good TV matches at the time. She's that great...
Hold on, I'm going to take you to task for that, because I was watching around the time, and I thought Lay Cool were horrible in the ring.
Oh, I fucking love Lay Cool, man. We're going to have words.
okay. Again, two wrestlers who were not nominated for this list.
I nominated them, man. Yeah.
But no one gave them a second, right, to put them on.
No one's helping me.
You know what, Glenn? Let's help Stacy out, because Glenn and I were talking before the show that even if we personally don't think they deserve to be on the list, we think that they should at least be in consideration. So I think we can get a second and a third for me and Glenn, at least to get the discussion rolling, right, Glenn?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm putting you on the spot, by the way. You know, Glenn secretly is thinking, like, man, I'm not nominating those two. They suck. You know?
while we're paused for a second, I will absolutely say that there was a period of time when Candice Michelle was legitimately good and was having legitimately very good matches. Sadly, if I recall correctly, that lasted a short period of time, and then she got injured. And then when she came back from injury, she was not what she had been.
Oh. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, and that was the period. It was like sort of like mid to late 2007 when she had her women's title run. Mm-hmm. She actually got really good.
I'll just say point blank, I wasn't watching at the time. That was Benoit tragedy. I was out. I tapped out around that time. It took CM Punk and coming in 2009, doing that heel run with Jeff Hardy for me to get back into wrestling. So, but I tapped out of the company for like almost 2 years. So,
fair enough. Yeah.
Okay.
No, but Candice was good in that period. Yeah, and then when she dropped the title to Beth, she got injured. And then it was never the same after that. So that was a very, very brief run for Candice. But anyway,
So before we go to break, Beth Phoenix making your list also here, Stacey.
I think so. Yeah, she like on the back end somewhere, like not super high, because like I've sort of alluded to, like I don't see her as that much different to a lot of girls who aren't as obviously appreciated by anyone but me, like Melina and yeah. Michelle and Layla and
yeah,
all these
like
sort
Melina,
of guys.
You know, she's got skills. But
I think what sets her apart is, like, yeah, her uniqueness, because she had size and strength and could do, like, the highlight reel spots. And she had the highlights with Santino, the Rumble, you know. But she also had, like, a lot of good matches. So, yeah, definitely on my list somewhere.
Okay. And so before we go to break, I point, you know, pointed this question out. Are you, and I'm not saying this to put you on the spot, but in years past, in like discussions, we've always talked about like grading women on a curve. And when the NXT wrestlers first came out, we had to kind of decide, are they legitimately having great matches, or are they having better matches than what we normally expect from women? And so the reason I bring this up is because we kept talking about like the women like Lita, Trish, Molly, where, oh, they had this really good long 5-minute match, you know, whereas like for most men on this list, being like having decent 5-minute matches or good 5-minute matches isn't going to even get you in consideration for the top 200, much less top 100. And so I'm really curious, like, and I want to hear both of your opinions briefly before we go to break. Do we take that into consideration that, well, you know, they outperformed expectations, so we're giving them credit for that, or are we calling them legitimately good wrestlers? And Stacey, I'm going to get your take first, then Glenn, then we'll go to the break.
Well, I've always seen like the phrase tossed around about the women, like grading them on a curve or whatever. I don't believe that I grade them on a curve in a sense that like I'm like sort of giving them a leg up, you know what I mean? But what I do is that I look at the Divas matches, so to speak, not sort of the ones now that the women's revolutions happened, but the ones before that. I look at them almost as if they're their own style of wrestling, mainly because of the time. Because they like just legitimately just never get any time to wrestle. Like I found out a year or so ago that Trish Stratus had one match that went longer than 10 minutes in her whole career, and it was her last match. Like, that's the sort of, like, time frame we're talking about. I'm watching these matches every week, and they're, like, 2-minute matches, 3-minute matches. You might get 5 minutes or 6 minutes on a pay-per-view, if you're lucky. But it's just, it's time, and the time affects the matches. It just, it makes them different. Because you don't have time to go through A, B, C, D, E, like, so many, like, different steps. And you don't have time to sort of devote to something like doing a lot of limb selling, or something like that. And you don't have a lot of time to set things up early that then get paid off later. It's almost like every match is a sprint. And I just sort of take them as they are and don't sort of, it's hard to compare them to male matches at the same time, or even to compare them to the women's matches now, because now they get time and wrestle basically the same as the men do. But I find it hard to compare them to them just because it's a completely different style of match when you only have 2.5 minutes to work. And I think if the men had 2.5 minutes to work every week, they would run into the exact same problems. And so, like, to me, it's not about grading them on a curve, but it's almost like just treating Divas matches as their own, like, sort of subset of wrestling style. You know what I mean? Like, the same way that you would treat, like, a spot fest differently to a normal match, or you treat a garbage match different to a normal match, because they're just different standards of what the match is. You know, and what to expect out of it.
I will say this. That's probably the best argument for taking them into consideration that I've ever heard. And the reason I say that is because a lot of people say, well, this guy never had a main event run or was never world champion, so I can't consider him for my top 10 or whatever. And I'm thinking, well, what did you do with the opportunity given to you? Like a William Regal, who I thought was fabulous in WWF. Or Goldust, who never had a world championship run. I don't even know if he had an extended world title program ever. But with that said, I always thought he made the most of his opportunities. And when he was able to perform in long matches, especially as a babyface and especially as a tag team partner, he was magnificent at it. And so I always point to that. So I'm not even going to disagree with your assessment there that, hey, this is what they were given. They were put in demeaning situations week after week. And even the word diva, right, is like, you know, implies
exactly,
itchy women, right? Like now, you know, and we saw this, we saw the new belt last year's WrestleMania, you know, where they finally are called women's wrestlers, you know, and now they're given main event spots. But we'll talk about those women later. But I am curious, Glenn, what's your take on this? I mean, because you're gonna put a few of these women on your list, man. So I'm genuinely curious on your take.
I am putting a few of these women on my list, and that's because of the qualifications that we're judging, the rating system for the project. Some of them have legitimately good points in terms of matches, in terms of moments, in terms of characters. And okay. So I would compare a lot of it to, you know, the mid-card of any given time, because for the most part, until very recently, women's matches have been exclusively in the mid-card. And so if you compare a Stratus versus Lita match from an equivalent, say, Intercontinental title feud from around the same time, those matches could be, you know, legitimately comparable, or the women's title matches, you know, might overshadow some of the kind of equivalent mid-card titles of the time.
Especially like when a Kennedy or Carlito was wrestling or something, yeah.
Yes, Carlito was the first one who came to mind, although he had his moments, but not enough of them.
Kennedy was abysmal, one of the worst wrestlers of all time. So, but continue.
If you consider the position that they were in on the card, and I think this is very similar to Stacy's point, that the position that they were in and the time that they got and the role that they had in the show, if you consider that against equivalent, you know, placements that men's titles and feuds and wrestlers had, maybe they got longer matches, although sometimes, especially on weekly TV, a lot of the matches are short anyway. Not every match, like it was for the women's division for a long time, but a lot of them. So I think it's a little easier to compare them without a curve than a lot of the discussions around it kind of assume.
Right. Okay. Hey, you know what? That's fair enough. Okay, real quick, Stacey, what were you going to say?
Yeah, all I was going to say is also that I'm not someone who really cares how long the match goes as long as it's good. Like, I see people all the time saying, oh, it was good for a 5-minute match, or, oh, if this just went a bit longer, it would have been 4 stars or whatever. I never subscribe to that, and I think it's because I've been a fan of women's wrestling for so long, because if I see them have a 2.5-minute match and it was really good, I'm like, hey, that was a really good match, and I don't really care that, oh, it was only 2.5 minutes long, because it's what they did with the time, you know what I mean? Like, that matters. So I think being a women's wrestling fan has made me appreciate short matches a lot more. And so it doesn't bother me that it's a 3-minute match, as long as it's a really good 3-minute match.
Yeah.
I think
I agree generally about match times, except for times when it really does kind of feel relevant. If a match feels like it's cut off too soon or feels like it's drawn out too long, you know, you might feel like, you know, that was such a good match, I wish there was more of it to enjoy. But your point is very well taken.
Yeah, sure. I agree on that point, too.
I guess to me, you know, if you look at it, like, let's give a literary analogy, it's like having a chapter in a story, you know, that if the chapter only lasts one page, you feel like it's not a chapter at all, you know. Mm-hmm. and that's kind of like the criticism, right, is that, you know, what kind of story can you really tell in 2 minutes, 3 minutes? And it's really apparent during the Attitude Era more than anything. Like, just guys are thrown out there in the ring. It's almost like if Vince Russo had his way, there wouldn't be a wrestling ring at all. It would just be like these big oiled muscled up men just doing stupid shit all the time.
And women stripping.
Yeah, women stripping. Absolutely.
Well, I
can't even blame that on Vince Russo. Vince McMahon too, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone. And I think that's kind of the issue, is that, you know, we're now seeing, and you know, who's to say that, like, in this era, that, like, a Trish Stratus or a Beth Phoenix or somebody couldn't have, like, some really good long 15-20-minute matches the way that the modern women are, you know?
It drives me crazy.
But they didn't get that opportunity. And so, you know, part of wrestling is not what could have happened, but what did happen. And having said that, I think both of you gave really strong arguments on why they should at least be considered. Like I said, so far, none of the women we've talked about are on my list. You know, that's just me. But I'm an old man, right, who's seen too much wrestling for his own good. But with that said, we're going to talk about some women that are going to make my list for sure in the second half. And for everyone that's listening, check out some of the things that are happening on Place to Be Nation. When we come back, we're going to run down some more of the current wrestlers. You're listening to the Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, welcome back to For Your Consideration. And today I'm joined by Glenn and Stacy, and we are talking about the women of WWE wrestling. And our next wrestler, guys, is somebody who, when she first came on as a character, was, I thought she was such a breath of fresh air because she wasn't a model. She wasn't woefully, how's the best way to say, inadequate as a wrestler, because this was the period where Johnny Ace was saying, if they're not swimsuit models, I don't want to look at them. And AJ Lee is somebody who was like a breath of fresh air. And I say this not to be demeaning, but she always felt like somebody, like for wrestling, it's such a nerdy culture that the nerds felt, oh, I got a shot with that hot chick. I mean, truth be told, they had no shot ever, but at least it made them feel better about themselves. And AJ Lee is somebody that personally I thought for maybe the first 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month that she was on air and they started featuring her regularly, I thought that she did a really good job. But I think she's also one of those people that kind of overstayed her welcome. And that when she became the GM, well, she was the GM, right? I'm not saying that's the wrong, that's the correct role, right?
Yep.
Yeah, she was for a bit, yeah.
Yeah. Is that I think she kind of overstayed her welcome there in that position. But she was somebody I actually enjoyed as a character. I enjoyed her interactions with Daniel Bryan, you know. Even at the WrestleMania I was at, I was upset that I didn't get the match. But I like, upon replay, when I watched it and I wasn't so angry, I liked the interaction between her and Bryan where she gives Bryan the big long kiss and then he meets the bro kick for the quick pin in that match. And right before she left the company with Punk, she had a match with Natalya at TLC 2013. And it was the first women's match that I'd seen live in the 4 or 5 years that I'd been going to live shows where, one, I didn't use the restroom to take a break, and two, I thought it was a legitimately great match. For me personally, up until that point, it was the best women's match that the company had had up until, you know, we started seeing the NXT women take over. And so for me, she's interesting. She's not going to make my list as one of the top 100, but she's somebody that I have a fondness for. And for me, she's kind of like the starting point of saying, okay, let's not just take swimsuit models and try to make them wrestlers. Let's take wrestling fans and people that have a passion for this thing, and let's feature them in that role. And so, Glenn, I'm going to start with you and your thoughts on AJ Lee.
I agree with a lot of what you said. That Natalya match at TLC 2013 is one of the ones that I went back and watched to prepare to do this show, because I was out of wrestling fandom for almost all of 2013. I watched like 3 out of the big 4 that year, Rumble, Mania, and SummerSlam. That's all I watched the whole year. And so going back to fill in some of that, the Natalya match at TLC was very, very good. The match with Caitlyn at Payback in 2013 was very good. And there's a moment that I loved in that match when Caitlyn was trying to spin AJ off of her shoulders and AJ countered into the Black Widow submission hold. And not just the smoothness of the transition and the counter and that was all very well done, but also as she locked in the submission, she like let out this big evil bwahaha sort of laugh that was just delightful and really kind of gets to the heart of how she integrated the character into her mannerisms in the ring and into her wrestling that I thought she did very, very well. A lot of the character work around the quote-unquote crazy character was kind of fresh when she started doing it. It did overstay her welcome a little bit. But just the way that she integrated it into everything that she did, her skipping around felt like, I think transgressive is probably too strong a word, but it felt like there was some sort of like unbroken rule of decorum that she was always breaking. And that really added to the feel of her character, just a little bit anarchist and just a little bit slanted sideways. That really, really made her a fascinating character and a fascinating wrestler. I think it would be absolutely fascinating to see how she would hang with a lot of the women's division today, because I absolutely think she could. But that's neither here nor there. She did have some very, very good matches when she was in the company, and overall, I think there's a decent chance she gets into the back half, back third, maybe, of my list.
Oh, wow, that high. Half or third, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. What about you, Stacey?
Not much to add, really. Like, Glenn summed it up well. I really did enjoy, like you said, when they started featuring her every week on Raw, when she was, like, she was basically the focal point of, like, Raw in 2012, when she was in between right. Punk and Bryan, and then she became GM for a minute and all that. Like, and it had been a long time since a woman was in that position. You'd have to go back to, like, the Trish and Lita era to where, like, women were that, like, were that featured and that central to the whole show, you know what I mean? So, yeah, and she did really well with that kind of opportunity that she had, you know, and, yeah, I like her in the ring. She was really good in the ring and had, like, again, it comes back to, she had, like, a fair few opportunities to have, you know, long matches, like 10-minute matches, which was amazing at that point. Because it had been, you know, they'd never got, you know, 10 whole minutes before. Yeah, but she did really well with, like, yeah, Natalya. She had a few good matches with Natalya. There was another really good one they had on Main Event around that time. Must have been 2013. Yeah, and the match versus Caitlyn is great. She had even, when she was back on NXT, in the old, like, reality show NXT that she was on, the Divas season of that, the women's season of that show.
I only remember that happening.
They did. That's when she first came in. Her and Naomi and Caitlyn, they all came in on that season of NXT in 2010. And her and Naomi had a match on that show where they just had, like, this sort of, like, balls-out spot fest for, like, you know, 6 minutes or whatever it was. And everyone just sort of sat back and went, whoa, you know, because the girls didn't sort of get to have that kind of, that style of match, and they maybe didn't have girls who could pull off that style of match at that point, but her and Naomi were so athletic, and so, you know, and they just, and they went all out and did that, so I remember that match fondly too. So, yeah, she had a lot of good matches over the years, and she really did well with the character work and with the opportunities she was given to do that kind of stuff. The crazy, you know, the crazy gimmick and all that, I think she was good as that.
Would she make your list?
I think so. Like, I'm not wild about her just because she was from that time period where I stopped watching Raw and SmackDown every week, and so I'm just not as personally invested in her as I am with a lot of other women. Like, okay. her and Paige and those kind of, like, girls who were in, like, just before the Women's Revolution, I'm just not personally attached to. But I think AJ's, like, resume is strong enough to where, yeah, I think she'll probably end up in the back of my list somewhere.
Okay.
She had a very good run.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of give her props because for a while she was kind of like you said, the focal point. More so the focal point that she was kind of like involved in main event segments, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, weren't involved in. And so let's move on to our next wrestler. And this is where we start talking about the Women's Revolution, the NXT girls. This is when we can start looking at women's matches and say, okay, well, now we're going to give you 15, 20 minutes, a 30-minute Iron Man match, whatever, and we're going to start judging the matches to the main event matches that the men are having, because now the women are themselves just as much, they have just as much opportunity to be in the main event as the men, definitely in NXT and more recently in WWE. And that's kind of where our focus is going to shift over the next five wrestlers. And the first one we're going to talk about is the one who is the most recent wrestler to appear on the roster, and that's Asuka. And I'm pretty well versed in wrestling. I know international wrestling. I know wrestlers from Mexico and Japan, and you know, but Japanese women's wrestling had hit a low point for me. So much so in the last decade, just me personally, I don't know about what the rest of the world thinks, that I didn't even know who she was when she came in. And I thought, wow, this woman is going to take the world by storm. She's going to be my favorite wrestler in a year. And that hasn't really happened. I'm not saying she isn't good. It just hasn't. She just hasn't, like, taken a hold of my heart the way she did in her debut, or, you know, even at last year's WrestleMania's NXT takeover. So I'm kind of curious on what y'all have on Asuka, because when she was nominated, I was really surprised that she was even nominated, but maybe y'all have a different take on this. And we're going to start with you, Stacey.
Yeah, well, I get what you're saying about how, like, were you more excited when she came in than it panned out to be? Now I think about Asuka and I'm like, yeah, okay. And I just care about other wrestlers more, like Sasha or whoever. But then when I actually sit down and watch NXT and see Asuka, I'm just like, oh, it's fucking Asuka. She's so great. Like, every time I see her, I remember why I got excited in the first place. So I just, it just, she just sort of suffers from, maybe just from being on NXT at the moment, because all, like, the other big women at the moment are on the main roster, and there's not a lot happening in the women's division on NXT to where, you know, that where a lot of people sort of talk about it or anything. So she sort of gets lost in the shuffle a bit, but like whenever I watch her, I'm just like blown away again. So I love Asuka. I got a lot of time for Asuka. She's so fucking great, and she's so unique to WWE. Like, that's why she works so well. Like, I don't know how much she ever stood out in Japan. I didn't really see anything that she did as Kana, but in WWE, when you have this, like, crazy-ass Japanese lady coming in and kicking people's heads off, like, it's just, it's so fucking awesome. She was
really stiff when she came in, too, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's just so great. Like, every match she has is just so great. Like, even, like, her squash matches when she came in was so entertaining, because she just kills these girls when she has a squash match on NXT. And, like, every...
Well,
let me
shift the focus a little bit. Do you think that she's been around long enough to actually even warrant a spot on the top 100 list?
I don't know. Like, I think that's the main knock against her at this point, is just that she hasn't been around long enough. She hasn't even made the main roster yet. You know what I mean? Like, that's really the only thing. And so it just depends how much people want to weigh longevity, you know, compared to everything else. But like, as a performer, like, she's so, so great. She already has, like, a lot of great matches when you think about it. You know, like, all the TakeOver matches with Emma, with Bayley, she had lots of matches with, well, two matches with, but, you know, the match with Nia, match with Ember Moon at the last, not the last TakeOver, the WrestleMania TakeOver, even the three-way at the last one. I know, apparently, she had another match this week on NXT with Nikki Cross, but I haven't caught up to NXT yet, so I don't know how good it was. But, yeah.
So good, so good, so good, so good. I'll talk later, you finish.
Yeah, oh, I can't wait to watch it now. I still got to catch up on NXT. But yeah, just every time she's in the ring, she's just doing something great. And so I think that has to count for something. I think the other thing about that sort of counts against her, and it's not really her fault, is that it seems like ever since, like, the start of 2016... Jesus, that's all I can hear. Ever since the start of 2016, the women's matches on TakeOvers are always trying to follow the best match on the card. As it just sort of happens that way. Like, the first Asuka Bayley match came after Sami Zayn versus Nakamura. And at that point, nobody was going to, like, care about that match. You know what I mean? And it was the same with every match after that. Every time they'd try and follow the tag title match, that just blew people's minds. And so, like, every Asuka match that she's been having is really good. It's just that in context, it's hard to get up for them when you just, like, got up for this awesome five-star tag match. So I think that's it. That, like, makes her matches suffer a bit just because of the spot that she's in. Like, she hasn't had a chance to main event yet or, like, do anything, you know, like that, just apart from having the sort of, like, second-to-last match on every TakeOver and just having a really good title match. But I think what she's doing is great, and it just depends if you feel like she's been doing it for long enough yet, you know.
Fair enough. What's your take on Asuka?
I love Asuka so much, it is not even funny. On PlaceBeNation.com, we're doing daily discussion threads now and evening discussion threads, and following that Last Woman Standing match between Asuka and Nikki Cross, I believe my
it was a Last Man Standing match.
Oh goodness!
Oh,
I didn't mean to spoil anything.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, I'm not upset. I'm just like, oh shit! Now I have to watch this. Like, I'm already just excited about it, even though I have to watch like 5 weeks of NXT before I get to it.
It was so
anyway. Go on.
So good. After that match, my comment in the discussion thread was, Asuka is my only god now. In her, all things are possible. I love the aura of invincibility that she projects. I love her competitive matches. I love her squash matches. Any card with an Asuka match, the Asuka match is one of the highlights, if not the highlight. even if it's like a weekly TV ho-hum comparative match against like a Peyton Royce or someone. But her takeover matches, her highlight matches have been so good and very different. Like, if you watch the first Bayley match and then the rematch before Bayley goes to the main roster, those are both two very, very good matches and very different matches. Asuka is playing a slightly different character, putting a slightly different shade on it. She started adding in more heel mannerisms and more of a heel shade to a lot of what she was doing leading into that match, and that's something that she's kind of filtered into and filtered out of as the situation warrants over the last 6 months or so. And always been very compelling in doing it. Her title match against Nia Jax was very different from the match that Nia Jax had with Bayley. Bayley overcame Nia Jax through cunning. Asuka just beat her down, because that is what Asuka does. She plays the character that she has so, so well, even while adding those shades and changing it up. She added some more of the heel shades for her match with Ember Moon when she showed some vulnerability for the first time, or a very rare instance. She is so very good at what she does and so very good at playing the role that she does. That Last Woman Standing match with Nikki Cross is notable.
Don't spoil it.
I won't. I will just say this.
It's okay.
I will just say this. Anyone who's heard...
No, not for you, Stacey. Don't spoil it for me.
Anyone who...
I don't care if you spoil it. I don't want to be spoiled. I'm sorry. Okay.
And anyone who's heard me on podcasts talking about Last Person Standing matches, you know, street fights, brawls, false count anywhere matches, will know that I hate what I call walk fighting, which is just filler that wrestlers stick in to get from one part of the arena to another, where both of them are walking in the same direction, and every few steps, one of them will turn around and someone will throw a punch. It's boring, it's typical, it's overdone, it's stupid. I hate walk fighting. In that match, Asuka and Nikki Cross managed to get to different parts of the building without doing any walk fighting, without ever being boring or typical. That'll be my last comment on that match, other than just, I loved it. I love so many Asuka matches. You can make a criticism of some promos, because obviously there's the language barrier, but I think she turns into something that works in her favor, because she is a woman of few words at times, but when she gets passionate, when she gets upset, she starts yelling at people in Japanese, and it's like she's going into another gear. Now she's really upset. You've done it now. So even that, I think she makes work for her. The only limitation that I think is a real limitation on considering her for this list is longevity. By the time we're all getting our lists in later this year, she will have been in WWE for like a smidge more than 2 years. And how you want to kind of weigh the longevity aspect is up to each person. For me personally, I really, really want to find a place for her on my list. But that's going to depend on how you weigh longevity. That's my piece.
That's an amazing case, because now I got to go watch all these Asuka matches. And I will say this about promo work. To me, and I made this point in the Facebook chat, people sometimes confuse not being a promo as bad promo work. To me, it's more important if you do good character work. For example, I don't ever remember Tajiri ever cutting a promo, but Tajiri was a fascinating character. Mm-hmm. Like, he conveyed his emotions despite not speaking any English on TV, right? Like, just great character. Asuka does the same. We mentioned AJ Lee earlier and how she would act crazy. Well, when I watched AJ Lee, I always watched her and said, she's acting crazy. I never thought she was crazy. Whereas with Asuka, the way some of her facial projections come off, and she's so sinister, you think this girl has an evil streak in her. And she likes hurting people legitimately.
She is legitimately fearsome.
Oh, yeah. When she first came in and, like, some girl would, like, talk shit about Asuka or something or other, and Asuka would just turn around and just smile at them, and you'd know that was a sign that they were about to just be, like, murdered on the spot. You know what I mean? Like, she just has that about her. Also, I fucking love her promos. Like, that promo she did next to the pool before, like, the last takeover, where she was just hanging by the pool going, no one can beat me, what the fuck? Like, she was so fucking great. She's such a great heel.
Oh, yeah, soft Asuka. That's what I call Asuka whenever she appears in, like, a sundress. rather than her, like, insane wrestling getup.
Smart casual Asuka.
Yes, so good.
Okay. Well, I'm excited. See, and she's somebody who I've kind of kept on the side here, because to me, longevity, when you're talking about that, doesn't mean anything for me. And, you know, I got people who popped in for 3 months on my list, you know? And I got people that have been there for 20 years that I wish that they wouldn't have been there for 3 months. So, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, for me. She hasn't made my list yet. In fact, nobody we've talked about so far has made my list. And that's just because of my bias against women's wrestling. Having said that, the next four wrestlers we're going to talk about, all of them are making my list. Even though I like a lot of the stuff that they've done on the main roster, almost entirely because of what they accomplished in NXT for the matches they had together, whether it was tag teams, three ways, four ways, singles matches, all of them had highlights in NXT. For me, all of them are equally important. And I can't speak for anyone else, but I know it's true. In changing the way women were perceived as wrestlers here in America. Before, real simple, they were divas. They were centerfolds. They were pinups, whatever. They were eye candy. They were in, you know, lingerie battles, whatever. Hot lesbian action, all that garbage. They were piss breaks. Now they're main events. They're serious. They're to be taken seriously. This is where they say, hey, we can do this. We can take the mantle. We can be in the main event, and we can get just as good of a reaction as the best male wrestler you have on the show. And we're going to start off with the one that will probably be the one that's lowest on my list, but I still give her credit because she was part of that important run in NXT, and that is Becky Lynch. And everything I've seen of her on the main roster so far, woefully disappointing. And it's hurt her quite a bit, but I still got to give her credit for all that NXT work, and I'm lumping her in here. And so I want to start with you, Stacey. Becky Lynch, on your list or not? Because she's the first woman we're talking about tonight that's going to be on my list for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's on my list. I disagree with you about the main roster stuff. I like her on the main roster a lot, actually. Mainly because she's such a good babyface. And as we've seen with so many other people right now, it is so fucking hard to be a babyface on the main roster right now in this company. Like, they've totally fucking screwed Bayley up. They've neutered Sasha. They've, you know, and everything they do with the men as well. Like, it's not just the women, it's the men too.
Oh, Becky, for years.
Yeah, exactly. But Becky is, like, a really genuinely good babyface. She's a good babyface worker in the ring. She's a good babyface character. She knows her character. And she's a good babyface promo. I think, honestly, she's one of the best promos in the company right now. She's definitely the best babyface promo. I can't think of anyone else who's better than her at the moment at just, like saying these things and, like, just projecting just such, like, realness and credibility and just being a nice babyface and sort of straddling the line between, like, pointing out all these injustices that are happening to her and whatnot and getting her down, but at the same time being like, I'm just gonna power through and fight through and just do it my own way and all this. Like, she cuts really good promos. Yeah, and I love her as a babyface. Like, she doesn't have as much to work with on the main roster as, like, the other three, because they're on Raw and can wrestle each other. But what she's been doing, like, I think I like her matches with Alexa. I think they're really good. She has good matches with Natalya on SmackDown. You know, whatever she's been doing, I think it's been really good. And like I said, I just think she's a very, very good baby face, and she gets points with me for that because of how hard it is. And then, I mean, you go back to NXT, and that match with Sasha on NXT was so great, and it was so important because that specific match was the match. Like, the matches that Sasha had with Bayley came after that, but the match Sasha vs. Becky was the first match where everyone stopped and went, whoa, that was a great fucking match. Whoa, that was the best match of the night. Whoa, why can't the women main event NXT? That was when people started saying it. When people saw that match and saw what they could do with a long, you know, featured match, and were like, whoa, get them in the main event right now. So, like, she's hugely influential for that reason, just for that match, and it's so great. But, yeah, so I think, yeah, so I give her credit for both, like the NXT run as well as her main roster run, because I think she's been doing good work with what she's got on SmackDown. Yeah.
That's a valiant defense. And for me, I just, you know, when I saw her when she first came in, just, and it's not just her, it was Sasha, it was Bayley. To me, when they would debut on the main roster, one, I have no faith in the company's creative. But I just felt that a lot of the matches fell flat, and I was kind of disappointed in the way that they. It was almost comical. It was like, well, what's going to go wrong in the women's match this week? You know, when they had been flawless in NXT, for so long. But that's a fair point, Glenn. What's your take on Bayley?
Well, Becky or.
Shit, Becky, whatever. You know who I was talking about.
Yeah.
Whatever,
I don't know what
Becky.
The fuck her name is. Nadia, Nidia.
They're all women. They're all, who cares? Anyway, I'm sorry. Just getting
caught up. The B,
thanks for correcting me. All right.
As far as Becky Lynch goes, I think it's a little unfortunate that she gets overshadowed, I think, more than she deserves. She did have that awesome match with Sasha Banks in NXT that, Stacey, like you said, kind of opened the floodgates as far as awareness and hype that a lot of the women's matches were getting. And then there was the Sasha Bayley match and their series that kind of overshadowed that in terms of, you know, match of the year candidates from the women on NXT. And then she got called up to the main roster and was immediately less important than Charlotte. And Charlotte was the one who shot up into the title picture against Nikki Bella. And that whole, like, three-way, three-woman group era that was not great. Not a great way to bring everyone up, but oh well. And then she got drafted to SmackDown and got her own division built around her, and then there was the ascendance of Alexa Bliss, and then Naomi was the one who is pushed as the champion now, and now Charlotte got drafted over to SmackDown. So I think it's a little unfortunate that she gets overshadowed as much as she does, because she does have a tremendous amount of talent, and she does have, for the time that she's been in the company, and Will, I'm convinced by your argument about longevity not really being that much of a factor. I think more of these people are going to wind up on my list after hearing that. That is convincing.
Thank you.
She does.
I mean, let's be fair. Besides being a jobber, Buddy Rose only had a 3-month run with Bob Backlund, and he's on my list. But he's also a great jobber too. Hey, continue.
Well, part of the way that I've been thinking about it is, a list of 100 is a lot of people, and when you get toward the back end of the list, like, there are going to be some of the lower card people from, you know, past eras that I have a fondness for. Like, I have a fondness for the Birdman, Coco Beware, and Special Delivery Jones, but I think that a lot of the people...
Coco Beware was a legitimately great wrestler who was kind of screwed up by coming to the WWE. Anyway, continue.
Not talking about him.
Talk about Coco for a half hour.
And even with the longevity argument, and even with a lot of the booking arguments, I can very surely put Becky Lynch over Coco Beware for his WWF career, you know? So there's a place for her on my list, I think, for sure.
Okay, that's fair. But she's on my list too. And like I said, I'm lumping her in that group, like the four horsewomen of NXT or whatever, of personally turning the tide on my view of women in wrestling, you know, and actually seeing that the WWE was willing to put them in prominent positions, and they exceeded expectations, but they also set a new standard. Like you no longer need to wrestle like the Bellas had been wrestling, or whoever else came before, where you now have to wrestle as good as us, you know, or be able to hang with us, you know. And so I give her credit for that. She's actually going to make my list. But let's go to the next person. And this was my personal favorite of the four for so long, and so many other people. I thought she just had so much charisma. Never thought she was a great promo. I just thought she was a great, like, she just had a great presence. And I'm an old man. I don't even care about this I'm the boss stuff, or that she's Snoop Dogg's cousin or anything. And of course, I'm talking about Sasha Banks, right? But I just thought she carried herself so well, and I just loved her in the ring. And, you know, I loved her matches in NXT. And I even enjoyed the women's three-way at WrestleMania last year. It was one of the, two or three good matches that was on the show in Dallas. But she's another one that, you know, whether it's through injuries or booking or opportunity, I just don't think that the company has done her justice on the main roster when I had such high hopes for her when she was NXT. And I'm just curious, Glenn, what's your take on that? Like, do you agree with me about Sasha, or do you think that she's also had like a positive run there on the main roster?
I think it's run hot and cold for her. Her first title win on Raw against Charlotte was a legitimately great moment and a great match. I mean, a lot of their matches are very, very good. She has the absolute highlight matches in NXT that we've talked about already in the last few minutes. So she absolutely has the catalog of good matches. She has run a little hot and cold in the last several months. Everyone thought that heel turn was coming, especially Jerry Lawler, who thinks that all women hate each other and no women can be friends. And it hasn't yet, which, you know, is a good thing in that, yes, yeah, sometimes people can be friends, but it also means that she's kind of floundering. The Nia Jax feud that she's in right now and has been in for a little while is not perhaps as good as it could be. I'm not sure how much that detracts from her case because of the previous great matches that she has and just the talent that she has, you know, in the ring and as a promo. Her promos are often the highlight of the women's division since she got called up as well.
Okay, so she improved then, in your eyes?
I'm not sure she improved when she got on the main roster. I think she was already very, very good.
Okay. I'm not going to dispute that. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't think it's not about improving so much as just having like more opportunities and different opportunities, like having the Charlotte feud where they had the Hell in a Cell, they had the Iron Man, well, she'd already had an Iron Man match, but you know what I mean? Like having a Raw main event, you know, having a WrestleMania match, like all these sort of things that she wasn't doing before. And then when she gets these new opportunities to do something historic or important like that, she always knocks it out of the park. Like that, like you said, like that match at WrestleMania 32, that was the best match on the show. I can't even think what else would even be like have been. Like that was the best match on the show.
Is that the one I went to in Dallas 32?
Yeah, the three-way, yeah.
Yeah, with the horrible main event, with that horrible Triple H main event.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes. Well, yeah. There's always a horrible Triple H.
The other match was the ladder match.
Oh yeah, ladder match was fun too, but I think
people
yeah.
liked that what it was. And I liked AJ Jericho live. That was okay.
Oh, yeah.
No, it has to be the women's match.
Yeah, I think it was. And, like, and yeah. And
look at the show again. The show sucked. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, no, don't. Just let it go. The Charlotte series was awesome. All those matches they had, like, it was like five or six matches all up, you know, in that series, and they're just all fucking great, just varying degrees of great. That Hell in a Cell match, Elliot and I did a whole episode of our podcast just on that match, on that Hell in a Cell. We spent like 90 minutes talking about it because it was just, it blew both of our minds. It was so amazing. And these, you know, these matches with Charlotte, they're some of the best women's matches in company history. Like, some would say the best. And like the matches with Bayley, some would say they're the best women's matches in the history of the company. You know, so I think whenever she gets these kind of big opportunities, she just like knocks it out of the park. And all that's really the problem with Sasha is that, like you said, like, it's just booking and just being like falling by the wayside and just getting stuck on Raw, because everyone, you know, gets stuck on Raw at some point because it's shit. And so, you know, it's just hard because everyone gets that main roster sort of like, you know, doldrums to a certain extent. But for me, like, I don't take things away from cases. Like, when I try and make cases and try and rank these people, I mainly just focus on the positive and what they actually bring and not try to worry about the bad things, especially when it's out of their control, especially when it's, oh, they've been booked poorly or whatever. Like, I just, so I mean, when you look at what Sasha has actually done, she has had so many fucking awesome matches. She's done so much great character work, you know, especially as a heel in NXT, but like, she also has this great connection as a babyface as well. Like, I mean, who knew? Like, she almost has like taken Bayley's spot, like a spot that should have been Bayley's on the main roster, because Sasha, we actually already got Sasha as like our babyface hero that we like seen come up and like invested in personally and know that she's like a childhood fan and everything and living her dream. Like, we got that with Sasha when she like turned babyface on the main roster and won the women's title for the first time and all that. And so I think in a way it was actually hard for Bayley to come in and follow that when we'd already gone through it with Sasha to a certain extent, because everyone, like, the crowds loved Sasha so much. Even when she was a heel, the crowds were chanting for Sasha and like turned her babyface.
Right. Yeah. Well, now to be fair though, you know, Bayley was botched.
Horrible
booking and writing, because the reality is that Sasha and Bayley appealed to two different fan bases, you know, as baby faces.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, and so to your point about trying not to look at the negatives, I don't think you can be truly objective without looking at the negatives. Like, there are wrestlers that I will not rate because I think that their negatives far exceed their positives, even though they were part of great moments and great matches. I just think that, you know, you have to evaluate the negatives as well, because, like I said, it's not the history we would write, it's the history that happened, that, you know.
Yeah, no, sure. Yeah, and, like, for me, like, it's not about sort of ignoring negatives or anything like that, but, like, when I'm, like, making cases, and especially when I'm trying to, like, rank guys, like, against each other, or, like, above or below each other and stuff, I try not to, like, just the way that I rank is that I think, well, what did they do, you know what I mean? Like, what good stuff is there, and sort of measure that against each other rather than, like, oh, I'm taking points away because of X, especially when it's booking. Like, I'm not taking points away from Sasha because she gets booked to shit on Raw, because fucking everyone gets booked to shit on Raw.
Yeah.
You know, like, everyone gets given terrible lines to prove it.
Yeah, you're right. So I'm like, and ultimately, whatever. You're going to be able to prove it in the ring anyway, right?
Yeah. So, and she's just fucking great in the ring. She's like, she's so great. It's great, great offense, great like signature spots and everything. She's got great timing and knowing when to, like, she can build a really, really epic match, you know what I mean, when she gets the chance. And just, she's a nutty bumper. She's the nuttiest bumper since Trish. She's also someone who is amazing that she's alive at all.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lawler, I'm sorry. Yeah.
All right. Well, since we brought her up, Stacey, Bayley, because Bayley's somebody that I'll be honest with, for me, in NXT, when I was watching her initially, she was kind of like the least of the four girls for me in NXT at that time, you know. But then she would have like great singles matches and blow me out of the water with great performances. But I also missed the point, like, where she first became popular. Like, I didn't get it. I didn't get the blow up dolls and the little girl that was like her little fan, you know, her little AJ Lee to her Lita or something, you know?
Yeah.
But she grew on me. And then, like, when she debuted, I was like, oh, man, now we're finally going to get the four women. Then they do the roster split, and now they're, like, they're not – none of them – like, not all four of them aren't on, even on the same show, right? So –
No, yeah, and they've pushed Bayley so badly. So there's no chance
for them to kind of take over as a group the way they did on NXT, just by the way the company's set up now. And
yeah,
initially I thought, well, that's not a bad thing. You know, it gives more talent spread across. But then it kind of is, because even though they proved themselves on NXT, I still think that they have a lot to prove on the main roster. You know, even though they've had a pay-per-view main event and a Hell in the Cell and, you know, some of these memorable title changes, I still think they're in that proving grounds. Because at least when I've seen it, I haven't seen the crowds erupt for them the way they did in NXT. And I'm not talking about just the small little 200-seat crowds. I'm talking about, like, the 20,000-seat, you know, arena crowds, you know, like maybe on the Saturday before a SummerSlam or Survivor Series or something. You get my feeling,
yeah,
right? Like,
I get that, but my response to that is that it's hard to compare any kind of main roster shit to NXT, because NXT, everything looks better and everything is more over.
Hold on, because I disagree with you on that, because we're going to compare wrestlers on the main roster, like AJ Styles, who never was in NXT, over the last year and a half or so, has been phenomenal, right?
I'm not saying that, so, but I'm just saying that, like, because when they do things with the women, like when Bayley, you know, won the title off Charlotte recently, or when Sasha and Charlotte had their series, had the Raw main event, whatever, the crowds do go fucking nuts for him. Like, WrestleMania, the crowds went nuts for him. Like, Sasha was the most over person on the fucking show at one point. Like, it just... So, like, I think when they do things with them, the crowds do respond, but it's just that on NXT, they're always doing something with them, so they're always, you know, at that fever pitch, whereas on Raw, like, you get, right, like, 6 weeks of bullshit and nobody cares, and then suddenly they get, you know, a main event and everyone loves them again. You know what I mean? So I think it's just
a
ratio of, like, how often they actually get a chance to be cared about in the same way, I think. Like, because when they do things, like when Bayley, you know, debuted, you know, the roof blew off. When she won the title, roof blew off. Like, when she was that mystery partner for Sasha, that pay-per-view, before Bayley even got to the main roster, the roof blew off. You know what I mean? So, like, there are... When it happens, it they do respond, but it's just, it's the main roster, and it only happens so often. And,
it definitely doesn't happen during Raws, because 3-hour Raws, I just couldn't watch them anymore, because
the shows
have been so dead. I'll catch moments, like, on YouTube later on, or, you know, whatever, but I cannot watch those shows, and nobody is getting sustained heat week after week on that show. I mean, there are exciting moments, but that is just... horrible to watch, and SmackDown isn't much better, you know, in terms of crowd reactions, especially not just watching stuff like from the Attitude Era, but even like for a low point, like 95, 94, the crowds were just so much more invested in the company than they are now. Like, this is, in terms of crowds reacting, this is the lowest point in the company's history. It's just dreadful. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then, but then even like, you know, like, Sasha has sort of lost her crowd reactions week by week. But then even you watch this week's main event, when she is in, like, the main event spot with Nia Jax and gets the big comeback and the big victory, and people were into it. You know what I mean? So they can turn it around when they get the chance.
Do it.
But it's
just about
being on Raw, and Raw sucks. Yeah. You know, like,
and it's not just the women either, right? I mean, it's the men as
everyone.
Well. I mean, it's Sami Zayn died.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Line Neville. Until he died on the vine, and he's been a great heel recently, but it's not like anyone cares about that 205 division. So, you know, it's not something that's just unique to the women. But, you know, like I said, hey, we're not grading on a curve here. We're comparing people from different eras, and we're comparing
wrestlers
across the spectrum, male, female, whatever, old, young, new, whatever. So we're going to have to say, you know, I just, like, when we say, hey, the crowd blew up, it's like they blew up for a 2017 crowd. You know?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know,
the crowd they have. It's the crowd they have.
But getting back to Bayley, like, her NXT run, where she was over and she was featured all the time, like, is just so good. You see such a great character progression from her. Like, when she came in And then she was the excited little Mark who was, like, you know, freaking out, marking out when she met Dusty or met AJ Lee or whatever. And then she'd, like, slowly start working and she'd always lose. And then all the girls would turn on her. Charlotte turned on her. Sasha turned on her. You know, everyone did. And then eventually she'd start picking up wins and she'd become more of a threat. And she'd, like, sort of grow into herself as a wrestler. And then eventually, you know, she challenged Sasha and won the belt. And it was, like, such a great, like, you know, journey. And then to reach that destination, and it was, like, the perfect ending, and you're like, yes. Like, and like that, again, that's the beauty of NXT. But also, Bayley, it was just so good playing that character and being that. And she also did, like, along the way, like, just improve so much and just grow into, like, herself as a wrestler. Like, because she – and then she, like – and it's so weird because she was such an underdog leading up to that moment, and sort of her character is that of the underdog. But when she had the title, she was, like, such a good ace as well on NXT. Like, she was, like, having matches. Like, there's a great match she had versus Carmella on NXT when she was the champion. And it was, like, such a great, like, you know, champion has a babyface challenger and they just have a good babyface match before the champ goes over. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of match. And it was so great. And Bayley was, like, you know, was leading her through that. And she had great matches, you know, on NXT after that with Asuka, with all the matches with Nia Jax, I think are really, really good.
I thought you they know, were she, good, not great, but yeah.
I enjoyed them, though, and I liked the idea of her, like, facing a monster because it's just, you know, just such a simple idea that you know, and works so well.
Fresh, yeah.
And, I mean, and she got that great, like, smoke and mirrors match out of Eva Marie when she challenged for the title and stuff. So it's like, you know, she had a really, really good run in NXT, even beyond, like, the horsewomen stuff.
Well, my buddy Dylan said that she was more important to NXT at the time than someone like Sami Zayn, you know? So.
Oh, absolutely.
That she was by far the face of NXT, you know, when the other women went to the main roster and she stayed behind.
Yeah, and it's not relevant, I don't think, to this discussion because we're not really taking drawing into account for this list or anything. But when you look at and the idea of a woman drawing, like, you can point to Bayley in NXT and say that because she was literally, like, the ace of NXT. And that's when they started doing a lot of house shows, a lot of, you know, a lot of runs, and then the big arena NXT takeovers and stuff. So it's like you can see, you know, a woman being put in that position, put on top to draw and doing it. So I, like, credit for that, even though it's not really relevant to, you know, to this list or anything. But, like, yeah, and I think, yeah, the main roster, like, she does good work when she can, but again, she's just been beaten down so much by this shit. So, like, the matches, the title matches with Charlotte, I thought were really, really good. Like, the one where she won the belt on Raw was, like, fucking great.
Okay. Well, let's get Glenn's take on this, and Glenn, you're
Hello.
What's up, buddy?
Oh. Oh, I love Bayley too. She's a quintessential NXT character. NXT, I think, is very good at building and developing characters, babyface characters, whose characters are that they are just good people, just good human beings. Sami Zayn is one. The quintessential Sami Zayn moment is in one match when he picks up the belt and the crowd starts, you know, saying, no, 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 don't hit him with the belt. That's a heel move. Don't do that. You're good. You know, to be over as a babyface that much. And Bayley is also just such, her character is just such a good person, which, it's easy in wrestling, especially nowadays, to have that come off as cynical, to make that sort of character just stupid. And she isn't. She isn't dumb, you know, but she's just good. She likes, you know, the children. She is such a connection with not just Izzy, but so many, you know, young girls, getting them interested in and invested in her and in the product. Although recently I think Izzy was sighted with an Alexa Bliss t-shirt, so I don't know what's happening there. Maybe Izzy's growing up.
Nah, that was fake news. That was when Izzy was going to, like, a SmackDown house show or something, and, like, so, like, Bayley wasn't there, so she just picked another women's wrestler, I think. Something like that. Like, it was misleading, posting it this week, I think.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's not... Yeah, Izzy hasn't turned heel on Bayley.
Oh, that makes me so, so happy. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, you can... That sort of character as well is something that NXT does very well and something that the main roster doesn't. And so I think that's one reason why Bayley's kind of wavered, is that they don't really know how to write characters like that on the main roster. They don't know how to develop and maintain characters like that. And so you have things like before the Survivor Series, when Bayley was part of like a 5-on-1 run-in beatdown on someone who was on the SmackDown Survivor Series team, just because, you know, main roster writer thinking, well, we have to have the Raw Survivor Series team fight the SmackDown Survivor Series team and ambush them before the match. But that's not something Bayley would ever do. That's not who she is. And so there's some of that inconsistency that's filtered in now, which is a little unfortunate. There was the whole story recently around the Extreme Rules show with the Singapore Kane match with Alexa Bliss, and the whole story was, you know, can Bayley be hardcore? And instead of telling that as kind of a layered story, kind of a complex story with Bayley, you know, kind of thinking, you know, I think of myself as a good person. Can I do this? Should I go this far? And then, as a babyface, saying, you know, I have to prevail over this villain or whatever, the answer was just, no, not really. Moving on. So...
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah, that's kind of hamstrung her a little bit, but even despite that, she has, again, the catalog of great matches and great moments, more so matches on the main roster, but matches and promos and moments, character moments and such on NXT as well. So, she's absolutely like right up there among, you know, the higher echelon today and among the higher echelon of women in company history, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, since we're including the NXT runs, you know, she's a lock for my list. And I don't say that lightly, because there are not a lot of modern day wrestlers or wrestlers that are featured on today's TV that are on my list. And there's not a lot of wrestlers from like the Attitude Era featured on my list. Just two eras that my fandom has decreased so much that they just don't have a lot of weight with me, you know? So for her to be on my list, I think is a real credit to what she's done. You know, not just in NXT, but, you know, some of the highlights on the main roster. But that brings us, guys, to the final woman of the night. And the reason I put Charlotte at the end is not because she's my personal favorite. You know, truth be told, out of the last four women that we talked about, Asuka, Bayley, Becky, Sasha, Charlotte would come in fifth in terms of personal favorites. You know, like... I'm just not, like, emotionally invested in her. But there's an argument to be made that she could possibly be the best wrestler of the five, you know. And she's been put in enough main event positions and performed exceedingly well in those positions that, you know, I got to give her props. And she's kind of the woman that the company decided she's going to be, whether it's because of heritage or because of her own talent, whatever. She's the one looks. She's the one that the company decided we're going to ride this horse right here and get behind her. And so we're going to start with you, Glenn, on making a case for Charlotte Flair for this list. And where do you put her amongst these five kind of NXT women in your own personal list?
It's a little hard to think about where Charlotte fits within this sort of group of women, because you're right, she absolutely got the biggest push out of all of them, and that's where she demonstrated some inconsistency as well right after she got called up to the main roster. I personally think that she got exposed once she got to the main roster, because she was not having matches that were anywhere near as good as she was in her last months on NXT. Her feud with Nikki Bella had bad matches, I thought. Even after she won the title and she was feuding with Natalya, those matches I also thought were very bad. The Brie Bella match was not good. So those matches I thought were not good. Right after she got called up, she was miscast as a babyface. She started to write the course a little bit when she turned heel. She righted the course a little bit with Ric Flair coming on to kind of almost take her on as an apprentice role in being a Flair, in being a heel, in the way that they wanted her to be. And eventually she found her footing in that role, and she blossomed at that point. It helps that she was having matches with Becky Lynch and with Sasha Banks, eventually Bayley coming up to have better matches in the first place, but also she got more sure of herself in terms of the character she was playing and the promos week to week. Got a lot better. The promo when she ditched Ric Flair, and Ric Flair was of course crying because he cries if he stubs his toe, and Charlotte just mercilessly destroying him verbally, that was a highlight for her, and something that, given her first few months on the main roster, I wouldn't have expected. That was a big improvement, and that speaks well of her talent and her ability to kind of grow into the role that she was given. So I think she fits right in with a lot of the current people that we've been talking about. She might go a little lower just because of those bad matches at the start of her big push, but probably not appreciably lower than the others.
Yeah, I think Will's on mute again.
Okay.
Yeah, I was talking, man.
Sorry, I just jumped in.
Hey, if that ever happens, feel free to just jump in, because, yeah, that's usually what happens, is that once Glenn, you know, stops, blah, 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 oh, shit, I'm on mute, you know?
I don't, too.
It happens. But, you take over now.
Yeah, Charlotte, it's just been amazing to watch her improvement on the main roster. Like, it's almost, like we just talked about Trish before, it's almost Trish-like in, like, that sort of, like, exponential curve of improvement. And it's just, it's incredible. Because, like, on NXT, Charlotte, like, she was already athletic, and she could already have, like, sort of, like, do some moves and all that stuff. She hadn't really put it all together in a package in the ring yet, but she still had some pretty good matches in NXT. She was definitely the weakest horsewoman in NXT, I feel. Just because she was still so raw and still, like, sort of, like, learning how to work and how to put everything together. She was also a terrible actor, a terrible character actor, a terrible promo, wooden as fuck on NXT. And even, like Glenn said, even in the early bit of her main roster run, when she was still a babyface, she was just, like, very awkward, very wooden, just, you know. And then she turned heel and just bang, like, something clicked. And she would just, like, improve every single week. Like, you could just see it before your eyes how much she was getting better and how much she, like, started to get it, like, in capital letters, get it. Even in the same segment, even, like, in a segment, she'd start out and say something really awkward, and then she'd, like, turn around and start bitching out the crowd for yelling at her, and just, like, she'd just get it like that. And the same in the ring. Like, in the ring, she'd sort of, like, wander around awkwardly or, like, botch a move or miss something. But then she'd turn around and just nail someone, you know, and do this cool thing or, like, do a little bit of character work. And it was like, yeah. So you just – it's been amazing to me to watch, like, how good she has gotten on, like, Raw, like, on SmackDown.
Yeah. Well, even on NXT, it was kind of like when we first started doing NXT TakeOver reaction shows, it was kind of like, you know, like, let's criticize Charlotte. And by the end of her run there, everyone was talking about how Charlotte was, like, the best woman in a match, you know?
Yeah.
And so there was definitely that improvement that went over. And I think what hurt her on the main roster was this idea that we're going to revolve everything around her specifically, whereas in NXT, it was kind of the group as a whole. Yeah. You know, so it was like, before, you know, all of you are going to carry this thing, you know, that we're trying to do with the women. And then on the main roster, it's like, okay, just now you're going to carry this ton of weight, you know?
Yeah.
You don't have anyone to help you anymore.
Yeah, and early on, it wasn't a good fit. Like, when she was a babyface early on, and even the early parts of her heel run, like you said, like, it was all on her, and she often couldn't really carry it by herself. But then once she got it, like, once she just really started growing into that role, she nailed it, and you can see exactly why they build the division around her, and, like, and still do on SmackDown to a certain extent. You know, like, when she came over, it was, like, the biggest signing ever for SmackDown and stuff. You know, they were really pushing her. She's great. I think she was great with Flair. Like, when she had Flair as her manager, she would do this bit where, like, she'd be in a big match and she'd be in control, but then at the end when the babyface would come back, or, like, the babyface would keep kicking out of stuff, or she couldn't beat them, or she was on the ropes, she'd do this great bit where she'd, like, start throwing a tantrum and she'd turn around to Flair and be like, "Dad!" and just start crying, like crying out for Rick's help. And that's when he would start interfering or start distracting people and start doing shit because she needed his help, you know? And then once she ditched him, and yeah, that was a great promo when she ditched him. She was just like on fire. Now that she's alone, when she was a heel, I mean, she's a babyface now, but as a heel, when she was alone, she would still throw that exact tantrum, but she then had no one to turn to, and she'd sort of like turn around. Well, she'd turn to Dana Brooke when she had Dana Brooke, or if she was by herself, she would just start cheating or just do something, because there's like, she has this great sort of like character, like trait, where like in the middle of a big match, when things really start to not go her way, she just like falls down in a heap and just throws a tantrum, and then has to find some way to get out of it. Yeah, no, she's terrible. But Charlotte sort of like, she has that moment in a match where she breaks down as a heel and thinks, "I can't do this, she's beating me," and then she has to find some way out of it. And because she was a heel, it was usually through cheating or through whatever, but like, it's just such a great sort of like point to build to in her big matches that she used really, really well. And I mean, just, you know, she's so like, because she's so big and strong, and she's throwing like Sasha and shit around, and she's just killing her, like in that Hell in a Cell she would just kill Sasha with shit, or in all of their matches really, like the kendo stick when they use that on Raw, like, you know. So yeah, like Charlotte, she's great physically. She's not super great physically in a way, because like she still every now and then will botch something, and it's like, and it's noticeable, you know what I mean? I don't give a shit about botches, but I give a shit in the sense that, like, she's dropping Sasha on her head and nearly killing her in the ring. Like, that's, you know, please stop doing that. But, like...
I like how you make a personal appeal on the show. Please, please stop doing that.
Charlotte, if you're listening, honey, sweetie, yeah. Please stop killing folks. Please stop dropping people, you know, like, but, yeah. But apart from that, like, she's just... Like, I mean, and I don't really care about mechanics as much as other people do. So, like, it doesn't bother me personally that she botches things. But seeing that we're being objective, I'll just throw it out there. But,
She has to be safe, and she has to nail the moves.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But she's just, other than that, she's just so good in the ring, because she really does put a beating on girls. And then she turns around and takes stuff really well as well. Right. And it's, she knows how to use her size. Like, she doesn't always, but, like, when she actually figures out how to use her size and her strength effectively and just ragdolls girls, like, she's, you know, it's so good. And, like, she still, even as much as she's improved, she still, like, has so much potential. Like, it's still, like, we need to see how good she can get.
Not just her, but all of them, right?
All the girls.
Like, all, like, whether we're talking, well, Asuka is probably, strangely enough, probably a little older than Asuka, Becky, Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte. Like, the thing that appeals to me the most is they probably haven't even hit their peak yet. And for an old man like me, I've been watching wrestling much longer than either one of you two. For an old man like me who's seen so much wrestling from so many different territories and from all over the world, you know, I am a little bit more critical of what I think of them and what I think of matches. But even for this top 100 list, I looked at the four, Becky, Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte, and said, no, they made such an impact on me and my viewing and my perception of women's wrestling. They have to be on my list. They absolutely have to be on my list. Asuka, still up for debate, but the other four, guaranteed spots on my list. I'm more curious, though, Stacey, on... How would you rank those four? Becky, Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte. Like, let's go from least to best in terms of where you would put them on your list.
Well, I've been trying to think about this like since yesterday, because I knew you'd ask.
And feel free to change. That. Yeah, feel free to change your mind at a later date.
Absolutely. Just right now. But as of right now, I think it's so hard.
You got to do it. Commit. Come on.
I would put Becky fourth, just because she doesn't have the high-end matches that the other three have. Like, she has the Sasha match, but that's pretty much it, because she is stuck on SmackDown. Charlotte, maybe Charlotte next, actually. Just because I'm, not as personally invested in Charlotte as I am in Bailey and Sasha. Like, same with you. Bailey, I love so much, and just that character and that connection that she has with the crowd, like as a babyface, I think is just like
Sasha.
And Sasha's definitely the best out of all of them, I think, in terms of like everything. Like she's so she is, her character, total package, how good she's in the ring, all the great matches she's had with all three of them.
Yeah.
You know, she's had the best matches out of them, and Sasha definitely will end up very high for me.
Okay, and Glenn, I'm going to throw the same question to you. How would you rate those four? And if you want to include Asuka in that discussion, you can throw her in the five. But I want you to rank those five.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for not going to me first and giving me a couple minutes to think about it. I think from least to best.
What was that?
He's crying.
They're at having to read them.
Oh, I thought he was laughing. I was like, man, what's up with that evil Eric Bischoff laugh?
No. That was laughing. That was laughing. I'm having a good time.
Oh, my bad.
Okay.
I think I would say Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Sasha, Bailey, and Asuka is my only god now.
Okay, that's fair enough. Okay, I forgot that you worship at the altar of Asuka.
In her, all things are possible.
Yeah. Well, guys, I want to thank both of you for doing this show. Truth be told, right now, only the last four that we talked about, Becky, Bailey, Sasha, and Charlotte, are on my list. But I am going to revisit some of the earlier women's matches, mainly based on your recommendations, Stacey. I'm going to keep an open mind. I mean, my mind can be changed. I'm not so rigid that I won't consider the possibility that they could sneak on, but I did live through that time, and at the time they didn't impress me, so it's going to be a tall order for them to get on my list. But I do think, since the women are nominated and that they have kind of grown as a division from what we saw, I mean, let's be honest, when we were talking about Sable at the beginning of the show, it was about Playboy centerfolds and whatever, and swimsuit competitions. And by the time we got to Charlotte and Bailey and Sasha, it was all about the work. It was all about the wrestling, the characters, and the women being equal to men. So not only through the actual history of the women's division, but even through this show, we kind of saw a chronology of women's wrestling evolving from TNA programs to mid-card piss break matches to main event caliber talent and programs. So I think doing this show was beneficial, not only just to promote women's wrestling in the WWE, but also for the project as well, because I think both of you did a valiant job of arguing points for and against these women. So I appreciate both of you being on the show. Stacy had a great debut. We'll definitely get you on. Maybe when we do some of the reaction shows, because I hope to be a part of those again. I'll talk to Chris and Devin, see if they'll let me tag along again. But I was going to ask you, do you watch the pay-per-views as they happen live, or do you have to watch them like next day when you wake up or something?
Well, they happen during the day for me. So if I am at home, which I usually am, then yes, I watch the pay-per-views live.
Oh, yeah, we'll get you on a reaction show. Hell, I probably won't even be on the show, and I'll make sure Chris and those guys get you on. But yeah, and Glenn, what else do you have down the road here on Place to Be?
Well, you hit on it when you first introduced me. There's the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular. Has an extensive archive of episodes, and each and every week, the Wednesday walk around the web, a roundup of things that I find interesting or informative in some way. So please check that out.
Oh, yeah, and as I mentioned, Stacey, if you haven't done so, read those Wednesday walk around the webs. It'll save you so much time in actually surfing the web for meaningless crap that happens on a day-to-day basis. So,
excellent. Yeah. And also, I should also plug the podcast that Elliot and I do on Place to Be Nation, Stacey and Elliot's Bogus Journey, where
I've been out of the game.
Well, you need to start listening, man.
I had no idea. No, Elliot's a buddy of mine. So he never told me he was doing a podcast, but you know, I've been going through my own personal journey. You know, the Good Helmet World Tour.
Last year, I've really been out of the game.
If I would have known that, I would have. Oh, I wouldn't have said, you know, hey, on her podcast, because I do know that you did a podcast for the Greatest Wrestler Ever deal with Matt D. But I didn't know you already had your own podcast here, man. Now I'm not even upset that I didn't know about it. I'm upset that you haven't cordially invited me to be on your show. You know,
I'll have to rectify that. Me and Elliot, we do the Bogus Journey, where we just take an in-depth look at some of our favorite matches and try and show each other some of our favorite stuff and try new things. We're going to start back up with it soon, and we're going to sort of make it a bit greatest WWE wrestler centric for while this is going on. We're going to sort of like take a look at WWE wrestlers specifically and some of our favorite matches from those guys and our favorite wrestlers.
We're gonna watch Val Venus versus Goldust. Oh, I'm excited. All right, let's pencil that in. Well, for everybody that listened to the show, I hope, as myself, Glenn, and Stacey did, you give the women a chance, and you don't look at the list of wrestlers that we're talking about and say, I'm not going to consider any of these people and skip over this, because this has been a great show. Had a blast talking to both of you. Man, Stacey, I didn't know you had your own podcast. That's how out of the loop I am. She would have told me before the show started. No, I feel stupid. But anyway, for everyone out there listening, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more episodes of For Your Consideration. This is number 5, so I want to get at least 4 or 5 more in before the summer's over. So everyone enjoy listening to the future shows, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Please hold your applause. Thank you. Oh, sit down, please. It's not necessary. I just wanted to take this time to kind of clear the air and make a fresh start between myself and Lita. Oh. So, Lita, if you'll come down here, let's just talk. And before this thing gets out of control, please. Come down here. Let's just have a talk, please.
Well, I think this is a good idea. Well, no, that...
Lita, please. First of all... Excuse me. We are trying to have a conversation here, people.
Yeah, please. Show some respect.
Bunch of idiots. Listen, first of all, I want to let you know... I am not doing this because of what happened last week with your husband, Kane, okay? No, I have done some soul searching. You know, I've searched deep inside.
Uh-oh. Oh, no, this is New York. Right.
Don't call her a slut.
Right.
You guys are idiots. You don't know what you're talking about. Sorry, sweetie. Listen, I am serious here. Don't listen to these idiots, okay? I want to let you know something. Me and you, we have been through so much together. You know what I'm saying? I mean, think of the history, you know? Trish and Lita. The history, you know? And I know I've done some stuff to you that... And I really regret everything I've done to you. But I want to let you know... People, if you don't be quiet, I am going to walk out of here.
No, no, please, people, shut up. The last thing we want.
Listen, I want to tell you one thing, and I don't care what these people say. Whatever they say, I respect you. I respect you. Okay, and I want you. It's okay. I don't respect these people. I respect you, and I want to let you know that you're like a sister to me. Okay? Not only do I respect you,
Sarah's getting choked up.
But I love you.
Oh. Wow.
So listen, what I want to know, do you accept my apology?
Apology.
Let's clear the slate.
I wouldn't know why she wouldn't, King. This is mighty big-hearted of Trish.
So, Trish, you respect me, huh? But you'll even go me one better and tell me you love me, huh? That's very sweet. Which is obviously why you've done your best to make this past year for me a living hell, and I do appreciate that. But you do have a point. We have been through a lot. There's a lot of history there. Which is why I don't believe one word coming from your mouth, Trish Stratus.
Oh, no.
I don't accept your apology. And there's one more thing I think you should know. Much like you, payback's a bitch.
Oh, wait a second.
What a terrible thing. She offers an apology.